legally sent the profits to support the terrorist Nicaraguan Contras. Casper Weinberger was 88 years old. For Head On Radio Network News, I'm Bruce Birch.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Hey, good evening. I gotta tell you, I'm having a hard time working up a bunch of tears over Lynn Nofziger and Casper Weinberger. And well, you know how it goes. The fact of the matter is, I almost had to leave the room when I read that the family was requesting that Casper Weinberger be buried in Arlington National Cemetery. And isn't it... Wrong button, honey. That would be me, honey, because Agnes is taking the night off. It's interesting how sometimes things we say a couple of weeks ago come true in different ways a couple of weeks later. Wasn't it just a couple of weeks ago that I was talking about how offensive it would be when Donald Rumsfeld finally shuffles off this mortal coil and gets himself buried at Arlington National? And there'll be flag-draped coffins and 21 howitzer salutes and speeches by Republicans about what a great American, blah, 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 blah. Well, turns out it wasn't Rumsfeld that gets the treatment so early on. It's Cap Weinberger. Cappy Weinberger, dead at 88 years old, and I'm really, really struggling with what I refer to as the Bambi rule. Or perhaps the Thumper rule. You remember the Thumper rule, don't you? If you can't say something nice, don't say nothing at all. But, you know, we kind of got to... This is the end of something. It's not the complete end, because all of the Iran-Contra criminals, who should have all... who should each and every last one of them die in prison, aren't gone yet. But Casper Weinberger was a big, big, big part of it. And, you know... I'm sure somebody loved Casper Weinberger. His mother probably loved him. Maybe his wife loved him. The press release tends to indicate that his daughter loved him. But I gotta tell you, I don't know why. No, okay, Bob, get it out of your system. Go ahead and say it. Casper Weinberger is in hell, okay? If there's a hell, he's in it. And, you know, I leave that up to your own interpretation of whatever you choose for a religion or a non-religion as to whether or not there's a hell. I can't imagine, if there's a soul, I can't imagine Casper Weinberger having done anything with his that would merit returning it to the great collective consciousness and let it be rejuvenated into other souls. Although I guess there are some faiths that would say that, yeah, boy, yeah, he had to recycle. Got some learning to do. I mean, think back. Do you realize what it was that Casper Weinberger was responsible for? You know, if I'm not mistaken, I think Casper Weinberger may have been my first political protest. I think it was in my freshman year of college when he showed up for a lecture series, the same lecture series that none other than Winston Churchill had once participated in. And we protested Cap Weinberger. Because he was a killer. And it is absolutely gonna drive me nuts if they bury that man at Arlington National. It's gonna drive me nuts if they bury that man with military honors instead of taking his body and stuffing it in an old oil barrel and throwing it out in the middle of the sea. This was a heinous killer, and he will be afforded the honors of a statesman. How in God's name does that happen in a nation that pretends toward being just? Beats the hell out of me. Casper Weinberger, if you'll recall, and if you want to, the death is noted duly at bartcop.com. And if you want to run by, you will see it's either the Washington Post or the New York Times, the graphic of him grinning like a fox eating blood out of a wire brush following his pardon by George W. Because, of course, Casper Weinberger, he had to be pardoned by George W. and a bunch of the other Iran-Contra thugs to keep George H.W. Bush. Sorry, did I say George W.? George H.W. Bush. George Herbert Bush. The hateful older guy. To keep him out of prison. For his role in not only Iran-Contra, but going all the way back to the skullduggery and political machinations that wound up in the defeat of Jimmy Carter in 1980. Casper Weinberger was an evil old man who had more blood on his hands than most of us will ever even contemplate. And you could argue that in some of the policies that he espoused through the Reagan administration, therein lies the genesis of the hate and the murder and the death and the destruction that is George W. Bush's Iraq. And again, I've said it a million times, go ahead and say it again, no harm in it. There are, according to Muslim traditions, 99 names for God. And there's a 100th, and only the camel knows that one. But I tell you here and now, there's a 101st, and God's name is irony. It is incredibly ironic that at the same time we are discussing, you know, once and for all, is this the smoking gun, the memorandum that came out, published in the New York Times, talking about how, confirmed this time. You don't get to fire Dan Rather and claim that it ain't real this time, right-wingers. Is this the smoking gun that proves that George Bush, who stood in my beloved state a week ago and said no president wants to go to war as a first alternative? Horse hockey. That president, that erstwhile president, that pseudo-president, damn sure did. And made it up as he went along. You know, we know from the Paul O'Neill that they were talking about war with Iraq in, what, March 2001, 2 months in? We know from William Cohen, defense secretary under Bill Clinton, that Dick Cheney wanted a briefing as the Clinton administration left and the Bush administration came in, and the only thing he wanted to hear about was Iraq. I keep wondering, because nothing is going to get better in the United States until Dick Cheney and George Bush are removed from office. That is the linchpin. We talked a lot about the immigration issue last night. The people who don't want to be treated as criminals by the Republican thugs need to understand that their troubles get better when George Bush leaves office. You know, it's 2006. We're on the front end of 3 more years of this man. He does not, the election's in 2008. Hooey, January 20th, 2009, sunshine. That's how much longer we have to put up with this hateful, incompetent man. He and Dick Cheney must be removed from office. Matt Rothschild at The Progressive magazine has a wonderful 16-minute or so audio piece. You can go and listen to it for yourself, in which he lays out point by point by point why George Bush and Dick Cheney must be impeached. He appeared with, appeared is probably not the right word in radio, but he was on Bruce Birch's All Things program Sunday night. You can get the archives at whiterosesociety.org. Matt Rothschild no slouch of an intellect, makes it abundantly clear why and how George Bush must be impeached. I'm beginning to wonder now if having a hearing on Friday on Russ Feingold's resolution is the smart thing to do. Because that resolution can't possibly take into account this now verified memorandum that shows George Bush plotting war, talking about painting spy planes in UN colors and trying to get Saddam to shoot at him. You know, that's low-grade criminality. Saddam was evil. He wasn't crazy, and I don't think he was stupid. He's managed an insurgency, at least according to us, that we can't seem to lick. So I wonder if we should be having these hearings Friday. I wonder if maybe they shouldn't be continued until Russ Feingold gets a chance to draft in the fact that we were lied into war, especially in light of the fact that, like the Zogby polls. The Zogby organization has done polling that suggests that, 52-53% of the American people believe that Bush should be impeached if there is evidence coming forward that he lied us into a war? What in God's name do you call what's going on with the memo that we now know, Downing Street memo, this memo, what does it say? The diplomacy was being made to fit around the plans for the war. Now can we impeach this evil old man? Those evil old men, please? How much more evidence does the American people require before we do that? In faith, I don't know. But I do know that if you want to know where the genesis of a lot of this imperial hubris of the Bush administration comes from, you can go and have a look at the corpse of Caspar Weinberger. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. There are places I remember.
Men get breast cancer too, and when we do, it can be very hard for us to talk about it and get support, because nobody expects a man to have breast cancer. But I know one place to get reliable, timely information about breast cancer. Breastcancer.org. It's a special place on the internet that translates all those big medical words your doctor uses into plain English. It helps you understand what kind of cancer you have and what treatments are out there. It helps you get your head together and make a list of questions for your next doctor's visit. And it gives you all kinds of other good information to guide you and your family through this. Breastcancer.org, the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
Friends, drugs and alcohol were the only friends I had. Then a real friend got me into a treatment center. It wasn't easy. Drug and alcohol addiction is a horrible disease. But I got better. I got my friends back, and I got my life back. Treatment taught me what a true friend really is.
For drug and alcohol information and treatment referral for you or someone you know, call 1-800-662-HELP.
Hello?
Hi, Bill? This is George Dewey from up the street.
Oh, hey, George. How you doing?
Good, good. Say, I noticed you've been walking to work these days instead of driving, and I don't quite know how to say this, but...
But what?
But your butt. Your buttocks. Your butt. I think I found your butt on my front lawn. Have you recently lost it?
As a matter of fact, I have, George. It's about time someone noticed.
Well, it was kind of hard to miss, if you know what I mean. Anyways, would you like it back?
Would I like it back? No, not really.
So it's okay if I throw it out?
Sure, that's fine. Take it easy, George.
Small step number 8. Walk instead of driving whenever you can. It's just one of the many small steps you can take to help you become a healthier, well, you. Get started at www.smallstep.gov and take a small step to get healthy.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Tom DeLay, indicted for criminal money laundering. Pocketed tens of thousands in campaign contributions from indicted lobbyist Jack Abramoff. 48 trips to golf resorts. 100 flights aboard company jets. 200 nights at world-class resorts and hotels. $1 million from Russian tycoons to allegedly influence his vote. $1 million from Russian tycoons? What else will we uncover about Tom DeLay? It's time for DeLay to resign.
Room. Eternity in bloom. And will I see you up in that heaven? In all its light, will I know you? Wishing makes it so. Won't you let me know? Life is eternal, and love is immortal, and death is only a horizon. Life is eternal as we move into the light and the horizon.
Yeah, but not you, Cappy. Nah, Cappy Weinberger, not for you. What a lovely sentiment in that song. But can you imagine eternal life for somebody who engineered the cold-blooded murder of thousands, perhaps hundreds of thousands, of people in El Salvador? Honduras? Guatemala? Kenya? Part and parcel? And, of course, you know, there's another Reagan aide dead today. Oh, God, this is the funeral report. What am I doing? Now, Lynn Nofziger, who was out there with the Reagans as far back as 1965. He checked out today, too, at the age of 81. Since 1965, Lynn Nofziger was actively engaged in helping shovel crap down the throats of first Californians and then Americans as the chief spokesman for Ronald Reagan. Do you ever contemplate your mortality? I gotta admit, I'm guilty of it. I think, you know, after you're dead. You're not gonna care much about what other people think of you. You're gonna be too busy being dead. But people do like to think that people will say good things about them and think well of them after they're dead. But you know, the key to that really is, isn't it, doing good things in this life. If you're a Bible person, what is it, the book of James? Is full of that kind of thing. Or, well, heaven knows, the Bhagavad Gita, the Quran speaks to it, the Buddhist holy scriptures speak to it, the Native American scriptures speak to it, the Popol Vuh of the Maya speak to it. What is going to happen to you after you're gone? Or what will people think of you? And I don't... What happens to a... Is it that Vulcan thing where the good of the many is more important than the good of the one, of the few or the one? I mean, is there some sort of thing cooking inside the minds of Republicans where it's okay to kill a million brown people or a bunch of Latinos in Central America, as long as we say it was for national security? Is that what it is? Is it some sort of the moral equivocation that less of I can't get my head around it. But I do, you know, I do think about that thing, that sort of thing, and I'm pretty sure that being progressive, being liberal, you do too. Now, a conservative, a right winger, a Republican, a Bush voter, they think about the next thing they can get their greedy little mitts on in this life. And we know that. We know that in point of fact because of what George Bush said about, what he says about history and future. I don't know if there's going to be a history. I don't know if there'll be a future. That's what made it so interesting last week when he was asked that question about how he felt about apocalyptic religion industry types. I've heard of it. And he sat there and fumbled around, and when in fact, you know, this guy has sat down and had meetings with none other than Tim LaHaye, the guy who has made a small fortune on trying to get people to believe that they're going to be cruising down the interstate one day and just poof, car's going to be empty, you know, poof, planes are going to be without pilots, poof, trains are going to be without engineers, poof, your surgeon goes in the middle of your carpal tunnel surgery, poof. And George, I don't know, but you know, 2 years ago, it's 4 years ago or whatever, I don't know if there'll be a history. That's apocalyptic thinking. That's the kind of thinking that makes it okay to say things like, we may have to nuclearize Iran before they can nuclearize Israel. You know, if the world's not going to be here in 10 years, what the hell does it matter if it's here in 5? That's where we are. That's where we live. And it is absolutely contrary to the way that I think about my existence and the way I suspect you think about yours. It matters what you do here and you do now, and that is the memory and that is the legacy that you build for yourself. And who wants to have a legacy? Who wants to have someone standing over their box or their urn or whatever saying, well, you know, this guy was responsible for killing 1 million human beings? And that's what, if there was any honesty whatsoever, that's what you'd say over Caspar Weinberger's box. And over Lynn Nofziger's box, you'd say, well, this guy helped gloss over people who killed 1 million human beings. Or helped kill them. If you were being honest. But, of course, there will be no honesty at the funeral of Caspar Weinberger. There will be no honesty at the funeral of Lynn Nofziger. They'll talk about he was a wonderful person, and he went to church every time they unlocked the doors. And that's just it's a revolting out-and-out lie. You do not get to participate in the slaughter of hundreds of thousands and perhaps even millions and go to your end and think that everybody's going to be snowed and think that you were a good guy. You know, somebody needs to get this through to George. Because apparently that kind of thing does matter to him. Somebody needs to get it through to Condi. Well, you know, Condi, she's got that bumper sticker that says, she who dies with the most shoes wins. But, you know, no, is it worth the effort? I don't know. Now, the phone number, of course, you know. 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. Jump right in. If the phone's ringing while I'm yakking, you're just going to get put on hold because this is Agnes Free Radio tonight. Took the night off. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
And in this time we've had to spend, you've been so good to be around. I thank you for that special thrill. Me going on until the next time I'm in town. Though I won't be back here for a while, I'll hear you laughing, I'll see you smile, and I'll remember what went down. I can't tell you how or when, but I'll be seeing you again the next time I'm in town.
What's it like?
What's it like?
It's lonely.
It's really lonely.
I miss my brother.
I miss my brother.
I'm surrounded by other people, but it's not the same.
I've got other people around me, but it's not the same.
It's pretty scary, but I don't let it rattle me.
It's pretty scary around here, but I don't let it rattle me.
You always have to watch your back.
There's no one to watch my back.
I spend my whole day worried who's out to get me.
I'm always wondering who's out to get me.
But I can take care of myself.
But I can take care of myself.
No matter what, I'll keep my head up.
No matter what, I'll keep my head up.
It's not like I have a choice.
It's not like I have a choice.
This'll all be over in 5 years, 3 months, and 17 days.
This'll all be over in 5 years, 3 months, and 17 days.
Go to jail for a gun crime and your family serves a sentence with you. Something to think about before committing a gun crime. Gun crimes hit home. This message brought to you by Project Safe Neighborhoods and the Ad Council.
Dad, let's sing that bedtime song.
Rock-a-bye baby by Newton's treetop. His first law of motion, make sure you won't stop. The same rules of physics apply to a ball, while gravity is a force that makes things fall.
By the sixth grade, many girls lose interest in math and science, but it's never too early to set your daughter's future in motion. For some simple ideas, go to girlsgotech.org.
A public service announcement brought to you by Girl Scouts of USA and Ad Council.
Parents, did you know that high school dropouts make 42% less than graduates? Someone will have to make up that difference, and chances are, that will be you. That means paying 42% of their groceries.
Ooh, more candy.
42% of their dentist bills.
No.
Even 42% of their therapy sessions.
It's all my dad's fault.
Save your money. Encourage your kids to stay in school. For help and advice, call 877-FORA-KID. A message from the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Okay, my sick little sense of humor is on display tonight. Playing the cards since you're gone when Casper Weinberger dies. Oh, I ought to be ashamed of myself, but I'm not. I'll tell you what, let's go straight to the phones. Bob is with us from North Dakota. Hey, Bob, you're head on.
Hey, Bob.
What's up?
Well, I just, you said that Casper Weinberger passed away today?
Shuffled straight off to hell.
Well, isn't that wonderful?
You know, I'm really fighting that emotion, Bob.
One down, 54 million to go.
You know...
No, I don't... Hey, I was there under that, okay? Under that umbrella, under that... Oh, I was there, okay? And... some of my friends. I talked about one last night.
Yeah.
Now, it's one down, 54 million to go.
Well, you know, it's kind of one down, John Poindexter to go. It's one down, you know.
Hey, I hope they start dropping like flies.
Well, Cap
was... kind of sprayed roaches. I mean, you know, crazy roaches. Hey.
Now, that's the dark side of my personality, too. I heard Casper Weinberger's dead, and I went, well, good.
That's the light side of mine. That's the light side of my personality. It might be the dark side of yours, but it's the light side of my personality.
Well, I mean, this guy's been out of the loop. He hasn't done any harm. He hasn't gotten anybody killed in a few years, but he created a legacy that has.
That's a fact. That is a fact.
You know, there was a clear law. I mean, we sit here and we scratch our heads and we ask ourselves, Bob, now how in the hell could George Bush and his people come up with this notion that we got the FISA law standing here? It's clear as a bell. There's nothing muddy about it. There's nothing incoherent about it. It says if you want to wiretap an American citizen, you go and you get a warrant. Now how in the hell could they possibly just just disobey that law. And all you got to do is look back to the Reagan administration and Caspar Weinberger. Do we remember the War Powers Act?
Bob?
Do we remember the fact, Bob, that the Congress expressly said no money to the Contras?
Bob?
Yes?
When that came down, we stopped being a nation of laws and became a nation of outlaws. We are a nation of outlaws. We are. Every American citizen is as guilty as this administration. We're as guilty as they are because we've done nothing to stop them. Period. There's no question about it around the globe. Not on any other piece of this earth is there any question about what is an outlaw nation. Just look at the United States, and we are an outlaw nation. We have disregarded our own Constitution. We've disregarded our basic beliefs. We've gone with these weird thinking people that call themselves, I don't know, Christians. Hey, Bob, why are you not still connected to that institution that you grew up in?
I grew away from them. I recognized them for what they were. Sure.
Yes, you did, but they didn't.
No. I mean, that was one of the things that's mentioned in the top of the hour newscast. You know, the fundamentalists in this country, Bob, they raised a ruckus and they begged George Bush to go help to please help that poor Afghani man. They're going to cut off his head. And yet not the Baptists, not the Seventh-day Adventurers. Nobody has come out and said, you know, here, welcome to our fold, Abdul Rahman. Come live in the land of plenty and enjoy the bounty of Christ's blessings in America. Haven't even lifted a finger.
Right. None of them. And guess why not?
Because he's a Catholic.
No. No, no.
Yes, yes.
Brown.
Well, no, no. Uh-huh. Well, yeah, there's the brown part, but there's the Catholic.
The brown part last night. We talked.
Yeah, there's
about
the brown part, but there's the Catholic part too.
No, it's the
they're seeking asylum for him in Italy, but the reason the brown is part of it, but the other side of it is, I mean, you haven't lived until you've gotten around a bunch of Baptists who are absolutely sure that there are no Catholics in the room and they talk about them Mary worshipers and how they're all going to hell cuz they worship that Pope feller.
I've been there.
Yeah, oh, it's something to behold.
I've been there with I'm married to a Catholic, or she was a Catholic, and then of course her, you know, because her mother was divorced from her father when her father, you know, was a son of moonshine, got put in Stillwater State Penitentiary in Minnesota. Then she got a divorce from him, and then she was excommunicated because her husband was a criminal.
Jeez, I love him.
Yeah, Jesus, love him. You know what I mean? She got divorced because he was a criminal. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Huh?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, so he made moonshine, she says. So he made moonshine. But, hey, the thing is, Bob, we have to realize that we as Americans, every citizen, every child born today and everyone born 10, 12 years ago and everyone born, I mean, I'm sorry, Cassie. I'm talking to this young lady that Mike Malloy did his part to keep her brother back here away from that evil war.
Yeah.
You heard it too, I'm sure.
Yeah, I did.
And that young lady is very intelligent, like my William, like my Guillermo. Yeah?
Yeah.
She is a straight-A student. She's an honor roll person, and she has no future under this.
Oh, it was a horrifying story. She stands to go into foster care because her brother's being sent off to Iraq.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Absolutely, Bob. The thing is, we are not thinking about the next generation. I sat down with William's teacher today. She was telling me about how she, you know, I gave her a book. Well, I read a lot of books. I do. I buy them, and you know, for Buzz Glass, because it helps, you know, helps them keep alive. And I buy a lot of books, and I read a lot of books. And this one is it's got Condi on the front and Bush on the front and all those monsters on the front. And it's written by I think Mark Crispin Miller. And anyway, it's just some information. And today I said, I gave it to her, oh gosh, before spring break. And I thought, well, hey, I can read a book in 2-3 days, and, you know, absorb the information, and, you know, I set the book down. Well, this one I just read, you know, the beginning of it. The part where the author explains what he's doing. I didn't get into the chapters. Figured out she'd be done with it today. No, she put it down to read a book on how to make money.
Yeah,
now,
you'll have that.
Bob, our country is headed for a crash that'll make 1938 look like, I don't know, nothing.
Well, the Republicans are getting a little nervous. The interest rates went up a quarter point today on action by the Federal Reserve, and it was the first interest raise of the new career of Chairman Bernanke.
We are headed for a crash, and everything is going to, you know, I mean, every other currency in the world is going to say, bing, and you couldn't buy it. You're not going to be able to buy a loaf of bread if you got a wheelbarrow.
Yeah, and it's the stuff that happens out of that that scares the life out of me. You know, the things that happen in desperate straits for desperate countries, I mean, well, here I go. I'm going to get in trouble. You know, you study your history of the early 20th century, and you see what the crash did to Weimar Germany.
Yeah.
One morning it's cabaret, and the next day you got brown shirts in the street.
Yeah.
Because a terrified people is a malleable people. Oh, wait a minute, that would be us, wouldn't it, Bob?
Absolutely. But hey, Bob.
Yeah.
Are you terrified?
Nah, I'm okay.
I am too. I mean, I can hunt and I can fish and I can get a buck. You know, kind of like that old, what was that, that country singer guy. He come out with, I can hunt and I can spit in his eye and I can pull a .45 and all that stuff, right?
Yeah.
I can do that, but I don't want to. I would rather grow old, you know, and kind of roll over and, you know, kind of, I was going to say, fart in the middle of the night and have my wife say, Bob, quit that. Well, I'm sure you never did that.
No, absolutely not. I'm superhuman.
You probably had a,
and I've got a cork.
Constitution. You probably had a perfect constitution, right?
I wish. But I know what you mean, Bob.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is, sometimes I feel a little bit disjointed because I feel like it's all one thing leads me into another, and it's just this spiraling thing down the rabbit hole, and nothing makes sense. And I am going to have a blue screaming hissy the day that they bury Caspar Weinberger with military honors.
Hey, don't, because there's no honor there. Okay, if they put his filthy remains in Arlington, they will dishonor every other veteran lying in that sacred ground. It will turn it sour, and it will be sour from here until eternity.
Well, you know what it says on the Tomb of the Unknown, right, Bob? Known but to God?
Yeah. Well,
you know, I think on Casper's tomb we can put known to God, and boy, is he pissed.
Known to God because Jesus pinched his head off and tossed it into hell so the demons could kick it around like a soccer ball.
That's right, Bob. We got to get out of here, brother.
Okay. Have
Talk to you later.
A wonderful night.
Sure, we'll try.
And, hey,
yeah.
To my dear friend Andrew in New York.
Yeah.
I love you, brother, and I am with you everywhere. I walk beside you. I stand beside you, and you, Andrew in New York, are the template for the next generation, because I love him. I really do. He's my brother. Oh, God.
Good deal. Well said, Bob. We'll talk to you later, okay?
Good night, my friend.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
All right, let's do take a break. This is Head On. The Americas. Another day making hay up in Hollywood.
Fight childhood asthma? Then fight it with a scrub brush and a hot soapy towel. Even in the neatest and tidiest homes, if there's so much as a crumb to eat or a drop to drink, household pests like bugs and mice will do all that they can to get it. Creepy crawlies like bugs and mice are unpleasant enough as it is, but they're more than just a nuisance for kids with asthma because they can actually trigger an asthma attack. So, give them a whole lot of nothing. Sweep up crumbs, wipe down tables, scrub dishes before they pile up in the sink, and store leftovers in plastic bags or bowls. Don't leave them so much as one tidbit or nibble, and you can stop a childhood asthma attack before it starts. Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org, because no child should feel like a fish out of water. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Treat me with understanding.
Treat me with respect.
Drug and alcohol addiction is an equal opportunity disease.
Treat me without judgment.
Individuals in recovery come from all walks of life and deserve to be treated with respect for winning one of the hardest battles there is.
Treat me with courtesy.
Treat me with humanity.
Alcohol and drug addiction deserves proper treatment. For drug and alcohol information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure.
There's this girl I kind of like.
Say no more.
You just have to impress her. Okay, but how?
Just, I don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
You know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, There you go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Joanne Woodward. Ever notice how many things in life happen in a circle? The seasons, revolving credit, hula hoops, the spinning of the circle we call Earth, and recycling. Together, we've already made a difference. Sorting glass, plastic, separating cans, stacking newspapers. Now there are lots of products made from things we've already recycled. A paperclip, in a more daring life, a 56 convertible. A cereal box, once your Sunday paper. It all goes back to the circle. It starts when we recycle trash at home and at work. It's completed when we buy products made from recycled materials. How do you know the difference? Check the label for something called post-consumer recycled content. Then buy the highest percentage of it you can find. You'll save a tree, you'll save energy, and in your own way, you'll help save the world. Complete the circle.
For your free Buy Recycled shopping guide, call 1-800-2-RECYCLE. A message from the Ad Council and Environmental Defense. Finding the ways that work.
God, that's silly. Okay. I don't know. Do you want to talk about Casper Weinberger doing what we all got to do someday? Or is it too much reality in your face? Shall we go back to the to the Blair memo that is the smoking gun? Shall we talk impeachment? Where do you want to go tonight? It's up to you. Most of the time, it's up to you. I got my own ideas about where I want to go, but I figure that what you bring to the dialogue is as important or more important than anything I do, and you know that. But I sat and I read the New York Times story yesterday, and we spent so much time on immigration last night that we didn't do it justice. And well, if you want to see some of this laid out very nicely, and it's one of the if you're used to watching or familiar with watching Chris Matthews, it's gonna make your head spin a little bit. But over at WD40.com, that's DUBYA the letter D 40 WD40.com, there is a video link to Chris Matthews interviewing an author of a book. Dadgummit, I've lost the title of it already. Put it on a brain cell. I shouldn't have left it on. But the book is not out in the U.S. yet, but it is out in Britain, and this guy does an amazing job of, again, laying out the case against George Bush and Tony Blair based upon this memo. And the weird thing about it, if you watch Chris Matthews, the weird thing about it is watching Chris Matthews just sit there and not doing too much of the knee pad stuff that Monica did for Bill that he usually does for George Bush. And I have real suspicions about motives in this instance. Let's go to the phones. Line one. Hey, you're head on. Who have I got?
You've got Sue, Bob.
Well, hello, Sue. How are you, dear?
Hi, I'm fine. The main reason I'm phoning in is because the clocks have gone forward over here, which means you're on an hour later for me.
Oh, dear.
So I fell asleep last night, but I not long finished listening to last night's program, and I just had to phone up and say, I am so proud to know you.
Well, thank you. What did I do?
This immigrant worker thing.
It seems like an easy call for me, Sue.
Well, it's an easy call for me as well, really, because, you know, my background, where I came from, I mean, we had the situation where they were bringing in Irish because they were coming over from the potato famine.
Right.
So the Irish were the ones that came in, and, of course, the Welsh turned against the Irish because of it, because they'd come and work for anything.
Yeah, to be, you know, to get to continue being alive.
Yeah, for food. And so I've got a lot of sympathy. And what your friend, when your friend Wayne phoned in,
mm-hmm.
And that is the way, and the piece that you wrote on the blog,
mm-hmm.
You're right. The answer is to accept these people and have them with you. You know, and that is the answer for everybody to stand up. And, you know, at the end of the day, everybody's in it together.
Yes.
You know, we're not rich. We're just wanting to get by. We just want a comfortable life.
Right. And we don't like being lied to along the way, Sue. That's what drives me crazy about George Bush and this business of jobs that Americans won't do anymore.
That's a scam.
Yeah, it's a con, pure and simple. I mean, if you think about it for 1 minute, he's trying to get us to think about people picking tomatoes.
Yeah.
When, in fact, we're talking about people who are roofing houses. We're talking about people who are building Walmarts. We're talking about people who are pouring concrete, putting up walls, drywall, carpentry, plumbing, electricians. And that's, you know, when Bush says it, it's just a lie.
No, it's just to get the American people to work for less.
Yeah, it's shameful.
So it's obvious if you come from a Labour background, it hits you in the face straight away.
Yeah,
and you know they've brainwashed people into thinking Labour communism and all this and that, and they've brought this up. It's quite right what you're saying. It's to do with this election. That's what they're going to be running on. You know, and there are people that are going to be dragged in and blinded by, you know, racist feelings and think they're losing something, and all they're doing is walking right into the blooming rabbit snare.
Yeah, and Sue, That's part of what we try to do here, and I'm so glad to know that there are people who can put it, you know, who can put it in plain language like you do, and just speak honestly and from the heart, and talk about the.
And it's not just about communicating to the Mexicans or to the Latinos to say, you know, it's Bush that's doing it, and expect them to just jump on board your cause. If you're not going to say, well, we're with you.
Right. And that's...
I'm glad I didn't listen live last night, because otherwise I would have phoned in and probably said something in the heat of the moment to upset people. But you can't be angry with people that have the courage to go out there, because let's face it, they took a lot of courage to walk out there.
Yes.
All those people. Because they could have been rounded up. You know, nobody knew what was going to happen.
Well, and we know that there are Republicans out there, Sue, that wanted them rounded up. Tom Tancredo has said as much.
Exactly. You know, they could have brought up the army or whatever against them to round them up. And those people had the courage to go out there and stand up for something that they knew.
And
they knew was wrong.
Exactly. And beyond that, imagine the courage that it takes to kiss your lovely wife goodbye and pat your little children on the head and know that by the time you see them again, if you ever see them again, after you have traveled 1,000 miles or so, that they may be a year, two older. They, your son may be a grown man by the time you see him again. How much courage does that take?
It's heartbreaking. I mean, we've got people over here that I know very well, that are from Nepal, from the Philippines.
Yes.
You know, that are working in our health service. And to be quite honest, our National Health Service would have collapsed without those nurses.
Oh, exactly.
And the doctors that have come.
Well, and we've got much of the same thing over here, Sue.
And,
we've got...
You know, and it gets me really angry when people say, oh, they're coming over here doing our jobs. And no, they're not. They're still in... You know, they're filling spaces that we haven't got the trained people to go into. And I mean, like those poor people that died, the Chinese people that died up in Morecambe, picking
yes.
cockles.
Right.
You know, Chinese. And that was, I think that was, it was on the holiday period. It was terrible. The tide came in and there's about 30 people. And our Tory party, which is the equivalent to your Republicans,
mm-hmm.
you know, the cattle thieves, because that's what Tory means. They're thieves, they're bandits.
I'll be darned, I didn't know
that. That's what
the
Irish called them. And so, straight away, they go on the immigration thing. On the last election, they ran on immigration and against gypsies. And they lost, because the British people don't get pulled into that. Our government may not have said sorry to all of the people in the world that we've done damage to, but the people have.
Yes, yes.
You know, the people of the colonies, India, parts of our so-called empire, most British people are dreadfully ashamed of that past.
And trying to do something about it.
And I think when you say about... I sometimes used to get frustrated about America kept doing the same things in their foreign policy over and over. I can see why now.
Indeed. Sue, we've got to hit our top of the hour break, but thank you so much for your
okay,
thoughts.
Okay, Bob.
And thank you for the wonderful good heart that you have.
Well, you know, you receive what you give, Bob. You reap what you sow.
I get it. I get as much as I give. I can assure you that. I can
well,
promise
I
you that.
So, and I hope Agnes is all right.
Oh, she's fine. She's just taking a night off.
She deserves one.
She absolutely does.
All right.
All right. You take care, Sue. Bye now. All right. We will take a quick break. And when we come back after our top of the hour news, we'll go to your calls. 877, the number 4, head on. 877-443-2366. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Don't rush on. And on Radio News, I'm Bruce Birch. George Bush took a discard Tuesday. White House Chief of Staff Andrew Card tendered his resignation. In Washington circles, Card was one of the most well-liked and trusted members of the Bush administration. Card will be replaced by Josh Bolton, known for his almost obsessive secrecy. A group of retired generals and admirals is calling for Tony Scalia to recuse himself. The Washington Post reports that the group wants Scalia to recuse himself from a case that will determine whether human beings at the Guantanamo Bay concentration camp have constitutional rights. On March 8th, the notorious Supreme Court justice prejudged the case, telling an audience in Switzerland that no such rights applied to the prisoners. Scalia has a history of prejudging cases and staying in them. Last year, he refused to get off of a case involving Vice President Dick Cheney, even though he's enjoyed a lengthy social relationship with Cheney. Bad news for the Gulf Coast from FEMA. The Emergency Management Department says residents in the area can expect another round of rapid evacuations as the 2006 hurricane season approaches. The presence of travel trailers used as emergency shelters will play a big part. People living in them will have to evacuate even for a Category 1 storm because they're unsafe. Students are leading the way in the fight against Republican proposals to deal with so-called illegal immigrants. Students walked out of classes all across the U.S. today to protest the way Republicans are characterizing them, their parents, and their loved ones. Some Republicans want to make felons of every so-called illegal in America. An estimated 11 million people are in the U.S. without governmental permission. Turnout was weaker than expected for Israel's parliamentary elections on Tuesday. Just the same, Acting Prime Minister Ehud Olmert's Kadima Party is expected to win a majority in the new government. The Labour Party is expected to win 22 of the 120 seats, putting it in second place behind Kadima's 29. The two parties will have to form a coalition government. Interest rates continued to rise Tuesday. The Federal Reserve boosted the interest rate by a quarter of a point. The increase is the 15th straight since June of 2004. The Fed says it may have to continue raising interest rates. Both stock and bond prices sank on the news. Where in the world is Charles Taylor? No, it's not a new geography game. It's the question being asked in Nigeria and Liberia following Taylor's disappearance from his residence in exile in Nigeria. Taylor disappeared just after Nigeria agreed to turn him over to Liberia for possible trial on human rights charges. Taylor is also wanted for war crimes in Sierra Leone. This is News on the Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.
Now, Mrs. Johnson, before we close on your mortgage loan, I want to make sure you remember Mike.
Hi. You can trust me. I'm African-American, just like you.
So, here's the low monthly payments and interest rates we promised, and here's where they triple.
The rest of this stuff is just here to make sure that we get your house when you can't pay us back.
What a lovely house.
Predatory lenders are never this easy to spot. Call us at 866-222-FAIR and protect yourself with the facts. A public service announcement brought to you by the National Fair Housing Alliance and the Ad Council.
More bad press for Halliburton. Representative Henry Waxman released a new report Tuesday cataloging numerous taxpayer ripoffs by the company that still pays Dick Cheney. The report deals with Halliburton's conduct under the second Iraqi oil contract. It details the company run amok and graft. According to the report, in one case, the company tried to overcharge American taxpayers by some $26 million. It was another blow for the Bush administration in Iraq Tuesday. A Shiite coalition backed out of peace talks sponsored by the U.S. The group quit over a weekend raid by U.S. forces that left at least 20 Iraqis dead. The problem was made worse because Iraqi troops who participated in the raid with the U.S. were under the command of the Sunni-run Iraqi Defense Department. The U.S. military denies responsibility for the slaughter. In related news, at least 19 more people were kidnapped in Baghdad Tuesday. Abdul Rahman is apparently a free man. Rahman, charged with apostasy in the Afghan democracy, was released Monday. He immediately went into hiding. Rahman is seeking asylum in the West. The United Nations is assisting. Not a single fundamentalist organization in the United States has offered to take in the persecuted Christian. Two members of the Reagan administration went to their rewards Tuesday. Former Reagan spokesman Lynn Nofziger died of cancer at his home in Virginia. He was 81 years old. Nofziger was a longtime Reagan family insider, serving the Reagans since 1965. Former Reagan Defense Secretary Caspar Weinberger also shuffled off this mortal coil Tuesday. Weinberger died of pneumonia in Bangor, Maine. Weinberger achieved his greatest notoriety as part of the group of Reagan administration servants who helped to trade arms to Iran and illegally sent the profits to support the terrorist Nicaraguan Contras. Caspar Weinberger was 88 years old. For Head On Radio Network News, I'm Bruce Birch.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're Head On with Bob Kincaid.
All righty then, let's crank up another hour. What do you say? I'm up for it, you. And as I promised, no fooling around. Straight back to the phones. And Jim is with us. Hey, Jim, you're Head On.
Good evening. How are you?
I'm doing dandy. How about yourself?
Oh, trying to remember the lyrics to Springtime for Hitler. I don't know why. I guess something you said in the first part of the show made me think about that. You know, as far as Cap Weinberger is concerned, Bob, you better get a prescription filled for a major tranquilizer and get your fire extinguisher out, because I'm sure they're going to probably have rights and sequences for him that are just going to be just dandy, and I'm sure they're going to probably award him some type of decoration, possibly.
Maybe the Medal of Freedom. Has he gotten that one yet?
Well, I was just thinking along those lines, and I don't want you out running around in the backyard with your hair on fire.
Okay? It's going to be hard not to. But the thing is, I'll have to sit in the living room because.
Well, he's going to be remembered now as the architect for that thing, the pamphlet on Soviet military doctrine.
Oh, yeah.
As being one of the architects of the American victory over the Soviet Union and that type of thing. And nary a word is going to be said about Iran-Contra or any of the stuff that they want to shovel under the rug so conveniently.
No. Never is heard a discouraging word and the skies are not cloudy all day.
And, you know, they'll say it's just bad speak ill of the dead. And, you know, that's basically, I think, what will happen there. If, you know.
You know, my manners really get in my way, Jim.
Well, I think that happens to a lot of us, so you're not in that sin alone, okay?
Okay, well, good to have company then.
All right. And one thing I want to say about immigration, and I'm not going to touch on this one too heavily because I really am not that well versed in this thing, but I do agree with one of the people who was on the show last night, who I talked to today. And I think the people they need to start going after are the people who are hiring these people.
Exactly.
And the people who are behind this doctrine of insourcing.
Yeah, well, you know, you catch a couple of those. What kind of bad word can you come up with for someone who will traffic in human misery and human desperation, pay them less than minimum wage? You know, you catch one of these guys and you bust him under the labor laws for not paying minimum wage. You make him cough up the back pay. You hit him with some punitive damages, and like David said, give him about 18 months in one of those razor wire affairs.
All 36, I say.
Yeah.
Harriet Beecher Stowe, where are we now that we need you?
Yeah.
We could rewrite another version of Uncle Tom's Cabin here.
Yeah, we could.
And dovetailing on your call from the United Kingdom, you know, I've just been thinking about the European Union and our relationship with that organization. And, you know, it's pretty funny. That thing started back in 1957, I guess, with the Treaty of Rome,
mm-hmm.
with the European Common Market. And it has expanded into, like, 25 nations, mm-hmm. encompassing 450 million people. And, you know, under the control of George Bush, our relations with them has just gone straight to hell. And their opinions of us have been seriously damaged.
Well, yeah,
horribly.
It is.
I mean, have you noticed how many nations have pulled out of disgraceful coalitions in Iraq that belong to the European Union?
And even Great Britain is not far behind, Jim.
Right. And, you know, these things that are happening in France are very interesting.
Yeah, you know, I've refrained from commenting on that because I can't get far enough into the Gallic mindset to feel comfortable with it. But on the
Bob, look at France. You've got four religions there. You've got Christianity, Islam, Judaism, and secularism.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're hearing us say God will be behind us in Iraq, and they're hearing Bin Laden say Allah will destroy the infidel. I think they're very confused about some things.
Well, I think so too, and you know, for so long the French did such a marvelous job of putting the church in its place. You know, you want to go to church, fine, go to church. But you know, we're not, you know, and some of this was the outgrowth of the revolution. But you know, France had for so long, how did they refer to the French king? Defender of the faith.
That's the English king.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. His Most Catholic Majesty. I mean, the French were for many centuries they were the heart and soul of the Catholic Church.
Well, yeah, along with Spain, sure, absolutely. Yeah. And of course, down the doctrine of secularism is definitely on the rise in France, particularly.
Well, it is among the former Christians, Jim. I don't know that it is among the Muslims.
Right, that is. That's what I'm saying among the former Christians. But I think the percentage of Muslims in France is very high, particularly because of their relationship with Algeria and the Northern Africa.
Precisely. But
and they're
also
really having some trouble.
And it's extremely high in Germany by virtue of the longstanding relationship with Turkey there.
Right. And, you know, and I'm not trying to make these nations look like they're a workers' paradise. Okay, because I'm sure they're not. I mean, look at France. They're trying to do away with the 35-hour work week. However, because these countries prefer babies to bullets, they're able to encompass social programs that provide a certain element of humanity and, you know, some type of safety net for people that's unheard of in this country.
Yes.
And, you know, it really bothers me.
Look at what they're taking to the streets over. It's a rather... I think a lot of people in America can't understand it because most states, and I mean even West Virginia, by definition of law, is a state where one's absent a written contract, one's employment relationship is that of an at-will employer-employee relationship in which you can be fired for any reason, and supposedly that's balanced out for the worker by virtue of the fact that you can quit for any reason. You know, which is just stupid.
Well, of course it is.
But we don't get that over here. The young Frenchmen and women are upset about the fact that they're trying to ramrod through a law that will allow a young person who has been hired into their job for less than 2 years to be fired at will. And that and within the mindset that has that they have there, that is fundamentally unfair. It's dirty even.
Well, you see, and there tenure comes with the job, okay?
Yeah.
And like, for example, with the federal government here, you have to be on board for 3 years before you get tenure. Or like with these jobs, like teaching jobs, or in jobs in academia before you have tenure.
Mm-hmm.
Or before your job becomes your property.
Right, but your job...
That's what tenure is, because tenure guarantees your employment, your job is your property under the 14th Amendment. And you can't be deprived of it without due process of law. Well, they have that automatically there.
Right, that first day on the job.
But like I say, they can enjoy these things, and they can have better comprehensive benefits. Like in Germany, in Berlin, for example, daycare. You've got 9 hours a day with a hot meal for like four kids for less than $200 a month. That's pretty good.
Yeah, that's very good.
And that's unheard of here. But the only reason they can do that, as I said this before, these people prefer babies to bullets. And that's, I guess, those are the only pearls of wisdom
And yet, out of all of that, Jim, you make that analogy, babies to bullets. And yet, I think, what, Germany is experiencing negative population growth and France is at zero or negative population growth?
Right.
It speaks to some common sense. And it's not because, you know, they're aborting all the babies.
No.
And,
no, they're not.
Yeah, you think about the euro. If you know, if you've got a common currency, it makes it hard for Europe to ever just plunge into the typical conflagrations that plagued that continent for 1,000 years.
Well, you see, here's the thing: in the eyes of some people, we are providing all the defense cover for these people. Well, I don't think they really care. Be honest with you.
I don't think the Germans have designs on the French, nor the French on the Spanish, nor the...
I mean, they've already grown through that. I mean, twice in the past century, I think they've kind of learned their lesson on that.
Yeah, they didn't have to get to Strike 3.
And as far as Japan and China are concerned, I don't think they have this fear of them that we do. I don't know. But I'll tell you one thing. This is a bad time for people like George Bush to be degrading our image before the European Union and this day and age. It is the time for us to come together.
It is, but it's never going to happen as long as that man's in the Oval Office, Jim.
Well, that's exactly what I'm saying.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. Jim, thanks so much
for your
thoughts.
Bye.
Have a great evening. And let's see. I suspect a break is in order, which we will... Let's make Rick in Panama City crazy a little bit and not take our break. Hey, Chris, you're head on.
Hey, man, how you doing?
How's it going, man?
Charles Taylor, he's in Bahrain with Michael Jackson. That's where you go when you pull a Polanski these days. Okay, the real it's Tuesday Follies again.
Okay,
I've got only one tonight because it's too good not you know
let it
anymore.
Yeah, let it stand on its own merits.
The real reason for Andrew Carr's resignation is a complicated story, Bob.
Okay.
It involves the paternity lawsuit between Ken Mailman and Ann Coulter.
Ah, you're trying to bring dinner up, aren't you?
Well, it's only supposed to look at those guts and run back out. The fact that Andrew Card was having an affair with Ken Mailman, according to phone records, the ever-controversial Ann Coulter sexuality can be tied to the 27th anniversary today of the incident, Three Mile Island.
Where do you get this?
Out of my head. Carl Rove, upon learning the truth, headed back up to the Situation Room to watch online several webcams of the devastation in New Orleans while swilling a beer. Through his fangs, that is.
Yeah, they got holes just like a snake's.
Yeah, okay. How did I do it? Andrew Card, Ann Coulter, same initials. Ken Mailman, Punch and Judy. You look at the Drudge Report, Crooks and Liars about Three Mile Island.
Mm-hmm.
You throw that all together in your stew and you get a poor health rating.
And suddenly it all makes sense.
Yeah.
In all seriousness, Chris, it is kind of funny that when they decided to throw somebody to the wolves, they threw Andrew Card, and, you know, I don't like Andrew Card.
I don't either.
But the fact of the matter is, he was one of the few people in the Bush White House that most of the people, you know, the hoi polloi, the people in the know in Washington, D.C., felt like was a halfway decent human being.
Well, I doubt...
That gets you bounced out on your ear in the Bush administration.
I doubt that anybody in the Beltway actually took serious that he was chief of staff.
Well, that's Karl Rove.
Yeah, I mean, that... Now that Bolton's in there, and they, you know, of course they had to convince Bush that it was that Bolton. And
yeah, see, I've got another Bolton to get confused with Michael now.
Oh, and our Bolton at the UN, Scruffy Pants over there.
Yeah, porn mustache Bolton.
Yeah, ooh, boy.
You know, you remember watching the old Bullwinkle cartoons, Chris?
Oh, yeah.
You remember how with not Fractured Fairy Tales, but something dealing with history. Maybe it was the Sherman and Mr. Peabody part, but the guy comes along, the street sweeper with the push broom, and he's got the little push broom mustache.
Yeah.
John Bolton.
Snuffy Smith on that good crystal methylene.
Oh, God.
This one, Bush Mavery. Refused to meet with Nigerian leader.
No. You know why. We pegged it last week.
Well, of course you don't want to meet with him.
Oh, no, no, he doesn't want to meet with him. He doesn't make, it has nothing to do with Charles Taylor, Chris.
I know.
Get with the program, brother. This dude's name is Olusegun Obasanjo.
Well,
there is not enough time left in George Bush's second term to teach him to say that.
Well, they've got a lot of oil.
Tough crowd.
They've got a lot of oil over there.
Yes, they do.
And he doesn't want to shake hands with this guy. He wants the
to
oil.
Kill him.
Yeah, he wants to kill him for sure. Like the West Wing episode where they gave him the pen and they put it in a box, and then they managed to make the plane land in the Bahamas, and that was that. But yeah. It came back to bite him. But now the new administration with Bolton is now going to be called. You've heard of Prozac Nation. This
yeah.
is going to be like Plague Nation, where you just attach a virus to the economy, which is already there, and you just let it metastasize. And yes, there's no hope.
Well, no, there is. I mean, maybe this thing out of the New York Times. Maybe this is the smoking gun, Chris. I gotta get my Anne Frank on and think that there's some hope somewhere, and maybe this is it. Maybe, you know. But then again, you know, the pessimistic side of me, the little devil Fred Flintstone on my left shoulder says, look, you know, it's like I've always said. If there is a segment of this population, and most of them are in, and a lot of them are in the House of Representatives and the Senate, and some of them are even Democrats. Show them videotape of George W. Bush drowning kittens. They would say, look at that. What a lovely baptizing. You know, what are you going to do? Chris, good to talk to you, brother.
Now, that would not be the thing. The thing is, how did Bush get those kittens away from Frisk?
You're just taking me places.
You,
I got no
you
business.
You brought it on. Up.
My bad on that one. Brother, take it easy.
All right, man. Thank
Bye
you.
Now. And onward to our good friend CB in Northern California. CB, how you doing?
Hey, Bob. I'm mellower today.
Okay. Well, it's okay. You weren't, I mean, you'd be surprised what people were saying in the chat room about you when you hung up last night.
You know, I was wondering about that. I was almost trying to screw up my courage to go in there and...
I think the quote was, she so eloquently and elegantly gives voice to our anger.
No, they didn't say that.
Something like that, yeah.
Okay. Oh, thanks, guys.
Because there are some of us, CB, and I count myself in that number, who sometimes in viewing this outrage am reduced to just a stuttering, sputtering mass of, see, it's about to happen.
Yeah, yeah. And that's kind of my point here, is that, you know, we have to try really hard not to fall for this. And I've been training myself for, 15 years now, not to let my liberal knee jerk up and, you know, cut my tongue off when it hits my chin. You know, so when I hear this stuff, I try not to just go right off down the garden path. I try and look at it really carefully and see it for what it is.
Yeah, see, that's why I'm looking forward to spring. I'll get the garden in, and when I want to scream and stuff, I will go out and pull suckers off the tomatoes.
Yeah.
You know, flick potato bugs off the spuds and come back in and I'll be all better.
Yeah. Gardening is one of the best meditative exercises you can do.
Yeah, except when you got a hoe in your hands. You
know? Yeah, sometimes hoe in your hands, as long as it's the dirt you're hoeing.
Yeah, weeds. You know,
weeds.
I grow more weeds than vegetables anyway. I mean,
oh, that's very natural. So anyway, not letting my knee jerk up to my chin.
Mm-hmm.
I've been talking about this on the blogs today too. You got to look at what is going on, what is, and the root cause of it. Now, I was talking about the root cause last night, and I think we all agree on that. But we are still belaboring, this issue. I mean, somebody really smart thought up how to, you know, get us all tied in a knot about this. It deflects from, you know, priority number one. But also, you know, it is true that very good jobs that used to be held by United States citizens are being taken away.
Yeah.
And that's indisputable, and I know.
And that's kind of what puts the lie to George Bush's business about jobs that Americans will no longer do.
Absolutely. And so I guess I'm trying to, you know, it sounded like Sue was upset that I was upset with all these brave souls.
No. I don't think any of that was aimed at you whatsoever.
But this
denigration of human beings. You know, that was
appalling.
You know, kid, that's why the kids are coming out of the high school, CB, and I'm proud of them for doing it, because the kids were born here, and the kids are therefore American citizens. And it's, you know, we have reached a point, and what a shameful point it is, we have reached a point where children are having to stand up for their parents.
Yes.
Because if the Tom Tancredos and the DeLays and the Sensenbrenners get their way, well, we round up mommy and daddy and granny and grandpas.
Right.
And we ship them back to wherever they came from, and we leave a generation of children on the street.
Well, they're almost certainly not going to get their way. And you know,
I'm not willing to make those assumptions anymore, Susan.
Well, And that's prudent of you, you know, but especially after everybody came out in such huge numbers, you know, the Senate is going to have to think a little harder about this, and I don't think it's going to be as apocalyptic as it sounds right now. But even if it was going to be that apocalyptic, even if the law got passed and suddenly, you know, all these people here have been turned into criminals, the enforcement is not going to be very good, and if we get rid of the current administration, if we turn the tide of, you know, of our ire towards the root cause, all of that stuff is going to get fixed.
Yeah.
You know, we can't fix anything.
It's what makes November 2006 so daggum important.
Yes.
You know, and I was talking about knocking on doors in wherever the heck it is that Tom Tancredo serves as a congressman, and just looking people in the eye and going, "Are you one of the people that did this to us?"
Right.
And you know, that was somewhat facetious, but that really is what has to happen between now and November 2006. And I'm not talking about violence. I'm not talking about being mean or insulting, but just asking people who go to the polls, by the way, do you know what you're doing? I mean, if you saw a kid running with scissors, you know, some analogy, would you try to stop? You're running with scissors. If you saw somebody playing with a handgun that you knew was loaded, would you stop them and say, "Do you know what you're doing?"
Oh, that's a very excellent point.
Tom Tancredo and his ilk are the loaded handguns that are pressed up against the temple of the American Republic.
Undeniably true. Undeniably true, Bob. But I'm just, you know, you said, shall we go over to this impeachment thing? And I wanted to instantly, actually, I not wanted to, I did. I went, yes!
Yes.
And well, then I realized I was not on the phone with you again. You couldn't hear me through the computer.
But that's where it is.
Let me try to make sure that I feel in my own self that, like, I really said what I mean.
Okay, go ahead.
That the president, the administration, not a few years down the road, even before the 2006 elections, I mean, they have made it 100% crystal clear they are felons, and they mean us harm. Our entire nation, our entire history, they mean us harm. We have to get rid of them. We need the numbers, double, treble, quadruple the numbers that were out
yes.
on this immigration law in Washington, D.C., all of us, of every color and every nationality in Washington, D.C., with signs that say, "Get out!
Leave!
Leave now!
Stand not upon the order of your going, but go at once."
Exactly. You know, I mean, and everybody in Congress will be quaking then, you know, all these guys who say we can't impeach because we don't have the numbers suddenly may find themselves able to impeach when they realize there's millions of people out there demanding it. That's that.
Well, and that is when they will pay attention.
Yeah. And so that's what everything I see lately, I just want to see if I can't make it do a U-turn and go right back to the source.
Yeah.
You know, the thing that will fix this or make it so that fixing can begin is that one act.
Yes, I agree. You have said it and said it well, CB.
Thank you.
You are more than welcome. Have a wonderful, wonderful evening, okay?
You too.
I'm going to try.
Okay.
Bye. All right, and let's see. If you're on hold, please stay that way. If you want to jump into the fray, I wholeheartedly welcome you to do so. This is Head On, and me, I'm Bob Kincaid. 877-443-2366 is the number.
It's the Cup of Joe Report. I'm Joe Vecchio. There's been more talk than usual over the last few weeks about the role of religion in politics. The First Amendment states very clearly that the government should not establish any official religion. There are, unfortunately, all too many people in this country and people in positions of power who would like to change that and turn the U.S. into a Christian theocracy. Frankly, I don't know what they're so afraid of. The truth is that an atheist or an agnostic in this country isn't going to get elected to any position higher than dog catcher, and the higher up on the national scene you go, the more religious you're expected to be. And I, for one, am very uncomfortable with this public showing of religious faith as a prerequisite for public office. I don't claim to know much about anything concerning God, but I do know that politics and religion make a very bad mix, as we've seen in Afghanistan. And I disagree with those who say that any society that isn't grounded on religion or religious principles is like anarchy. If we can have immorality with religion, we can certainly have morality without it. Simply put, what I believe is none of anyone's business, and what anyone else believes is none of my business, and that's the way it should be. As far as I'm concerned, anyone is free to believe anything they want, but I draw the line when people write laws telling me what I should and shouldn't believe. Let's keep politics grounded in what happens in this life and let God tend to God's business. Now get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show available via streaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com.
Hey, listen, tell me something, John. Do you guys eat a lot of mangoes down there?
Not enough to base a foreign policy on.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. We don't eat that many of them here either.
The United States is India's largest trading partner, and India is one of the United States' fastest growing export markets. And oh, by the way, Mr. Prime Minister, the United States is looking forward to eating Indian mangoes.
That's right. It's March Mango Madness. Nukes for mangoes, mangoes for nukes. Join Bruce and I, John Fox, this weekend, Saturday night, 10 p.m. Eastern Time on the Head On Radio Network. Catch us at fourthestateradio.com or headonradionetwork.com.
Welcome back. You know the drill. If you want to get in line, got a couple of callers online, but 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366 does get you into the program. And, of course, as I noted, Agnes is taking the night off. So what will happen is, as the phone rings at some point, I will simply place you on hold without picking up the phone. Okay? See, it's not so complicated. Now, all that having been said, let's go straight back to the phones. We've got Ed with us from WD40.com. Hey, Ed, how you doing? You're head on.
Hey, what's going on, Bob?
Oh, not a heck of a lot. How about yourself?
How'd you do on the basketball tournament?
Oh, just stop. I didn't get one into the Final Four, okay?
No, I didn't either. I lost everybody.
That's
the way it goes.
You know, I still had Villanova and Connecticut as of last weekend, and then that all came crashing down.
Yeah, we all just... I say go George Mason.
Yeah, why not?
Well, hell yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that turns... it sort of turns things on its ear. I'd love to see George Mason win this thing.
Oh, that'd be great. But that's not why I called.
No, of course not.
No. I'm calling about the immigration deal.
Okay.
And the last girl you had on there.
Yeah, our pal CB.
Although I agree with her in principle,
mm-hmm.
I don't feel that you guys are seeing, maybe it's the same picture I'm seeing.
Okay. What are you seeing?
What I see is another example of the Republicans trying to... I want to make sure I say this right. Get people up in arms over an issue that really doesn't matter.
That's why I said last night it was a phony baloney issue.
And it's like the Dubai deal. Okay?
Uh-huh.
The Dubai deal was, as soon as, and I'm almost positive it was Senator Schumer that threw the mandatory vote on the Dubai deal in with some other bill that the Republicans wanted passed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm almost positive it was him. And all of a sudden, it got shut down. And it never went to vote.
Right.
Just like the week before I told you it wouldn't.
Right.
Because they didn't want to vote on it. They never had any intention of letting the Dubai Corporation control these ports.
But, Ed, they do.
Well, I really don't think they do.
Well, I mean, the transaction went through.
The transaction did, but they knew that they could use that. And see, this all boils down to November elections.
Sure.
Just like this immigration deal, I think, is going down to the same thing.
And it is.
They're trying to use a different angle.
Well, but it's still typical Republican politics, Ed. It's shameless. It's divisive. It is. It's a fraud. It's a phony. It's phony baloney. It is not real.
I agree. That's why I say I agree on principle. But the way the Democrats could have, in my opinion, could have thrown a whole monkey wrench into the whole damn thing would have been to say, okay, let's go for it. We're voting for it. And you watch how fast they run from that issue.
Well, how very interesting you should put it in those terms, Ed, and you may very well be correct, because a Democrat did exactly that in the State House in Mississippi today.
Because there's no doubt in my mind, because if you think about it, every one of these Republican, and I got another term for it, but... I promised I wouldn't cuss on your show.
I appreciate it.
So
that.
I'll say these Republican jerks.
Yeah.
Every one of them owns 5 or 6 of them.
Yeah.
So
oh yeah, I mean,
don't want to get rid of them.
You who do you reckon mows Trent Lott's grass?
And as far as I'm concerned, if you look back at America through the past 200 years. America was built by immigrants.
Yes.
I don't have a problem with, I have a couple of good friends from Mexico.
Sure.
And all they want to do is make a better life for themselves.
Right.
I don't have a problem with that.
I want them paid a fair wage for a fair day's work.
I agree with that 100%.
The minute you start imposing wage fairness on this, the playing field will level. You know, if you got rid of right to work in the Deep South and the Midwest and the West, you ditch right to work laws and you will see an immediate change. But you're absolutely right. The Republican Party doesn't want to see it change. What I said about what happened in Mississippi, it's exactly what you just described. The Republicans had howled and screamed in the House of Representatives down there, or the House of Delegates, whatever they've got. They wanted an abortion ban. And they wanted it to be tougher than South Dakota's. So, by golly, the Democrats in the House went along with it, and they passed a draconian, just mean-ass abortion bill. And they sent it over to the Republican-controlled Mississippi Senate, and the head of that little cabal looked at it and said, "Are you crazy? I'm not signing this."
And so
the abortion issue is dead in Mississippi for another year. And it's
because... I didn't mean to jump.
Please go ahead.
I don't think the Republicans or the Democrats handled this right. I think they should have said, "Okay, let's go with it."
Well, yeah, because
100%.
If
and
you do
watch how fast these guys run from it, you know, it's irritating because I'm beginning to wonder about our Democratic leadership, to tell you the truth.
Well, I mean, I think it's fairly clear, Ed. We're dealing with checker players, and the Republicans are playing chess. That's what I keep saying.
That's exactly. Geez, I'm going to have to
steal it. It's yours.
Can I use that in my column?
It's all yours. It's all yours. You know, there. I put it in my blog. I put it in my blog post that was published there at WD40 yesterday.
I'm not very good at my computer. It's all I can do just to write my column and send it. So you can't depend on me to read nothing like.
Yeah, next thing you're going to do, you're going to be telling me there's whiteout on the screen. I mean, you know, come on.
There is, isn't there?
But now that.
As I told you before, I'm not a smart man.
Oh, quit
and
it.
I never claimed to be one. And.
Let's put paid to that, Ed, because you've just figured out something that apparently is beyond Harry Reid, Nancy Pelosi, and a whole bunch of Democrats in Congress.
Well, that's all I'm trying to see, Bob.
Sell me on you're dumb. I'm a lot easier to sell on the idea that they are.
I didn't say I was dumb. I just said I wasn't smart. There's a difference there. There's a big difference there. I just said I wasn't smart. I didn't say I was dumb.
Okay, as long as we're clear.
But, you know, it really bums me out that we got all these politicians that are supposedly on the Democratic side, and they can't figure out how to play the game and thump these guys.
You know where it comes from, Ed? It comes from fear. Because
the
Democratic leadership in both houses of Congress are operating from nothing but fear. And when you operate from fear, Ed, you and I both know you lose. And so in the theory that you're espousing, what you would do is you'd take a bill from Jim Sensenbrenner and Tom Tancredo, one of those really hateful things. And you'd say, you know, boys, we need to get this into committee because I think this bill's too weak. And you would bring that thing out of committee, and it would be the most hateful thing you ever saw in your life, and you'd throw it up in the Republicans' faces and say, "Vote on it, you bastards."
That's exactly it.
The Democrats, Ed, are scared to do something like that. The Democrats are scared to do that because they're afraid that the Republican campaign machine will crank up in a couple more months now, and it'll be nothing but campaign commercials saying, "Did you know that Representative Schmuck actually proposed detention centers for illegal aliens?" And they don't have the stones to fight back and explain it.
But you see, Bob, the problem is the Democratic machine is already cranked up, and that's why we're playing these games we're playing today, just like the Dubai deal. See, and I don't know about being fearful because I'm not afraid of those guys.
And, you're not, but they are.
I would, if I was in that position, they would they would hear me. There is no doubt.
Yeah, if you
there is no way that a loser like me could ever get into that position.
Now, see, you're doing it again.
And I wonder if maybe we're looking at the wrong people, start to finish.
Oh, I think we are. I mean, we've reached a point in the American oligarchy where you cannot get into Congress unless you are filthy, rotten, dirty, stinking rich.
I don't know that that's true, but I also think that the people that do make it, they go with good intentions, but by the time they actually check in, that they've already been taken by somebody else.
I think there's every possibility in the world of that being true.
And, I mean, I would love nothing more than to see just an average working man walk up on Capitol Hill and tell him how he feels.
Yeah.
What would be better than a man to go up there that makes, well, I make about $40,000 a year.
Yeah.
And what would be better than a guy like me walk up there and tell him, you stick it up your ass.
Yeah.
I'm not playing your game.
I'm not here to play inside the Beltway footsie.
And
you know, we get one of those every now and then, and they have this ugly habit of up and dying.
Well, that's true. It was that guy from, wasn't he from Minnesota?
Yeah, Paul Wellstone.
Yeah.
He didn't play it.
And
he got dead for his troubles.
Didn't his plane crash or something like that?
Yeah, with an icing problem in a circumstance where there was no ice.
I think it's a problem on both sides of the aisle there.
Well, sure it is. I mean,
it's not bad. It's not as bad on our side as their side.
Washington apparently has this really, really, really corrupting influence. And why should we be surprised, Ed? You know, when Bush took office, there were 3,000 lobbyists. There are something on the approaching 12,000 now.
Well, you didn't, apparently you didn't read my column on lobbyists.
Maybe I missed that one.
Well, maybe you should check it out.
I will go.
I don't have a problem with lobbyists. So I don't have a problem at all.
Okay, now I gotta go read it.
Huh?
Read it.
Well, that's why. And when you read it, and I'm not gonna tell you what it says or anything.
Okay,
when you read it, you will understand why I don't have a problem with lobbyists.
Okay, so that's.
I won't even press that.
Yeah, no, that's a high level restaurant quality professional tease there, Ed. Inside Ed's head at WD40.com. Ed, I enjoyed the conversation. We kind of got to roll along though.
All right, good to talk to you, Bob.
All right, take care now. Bye.
Bye.
Again, Ed, columnist from WD40.com. I got to go read it now. So do you. Now, if you want to jump into the conversation, that's fine. Got a couple of lines open, 877, number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
A new girl who's almost way with all the men in her life. Every inch of her blossom and beauty. She was born on the 4th of July. Well, she lived in an aluminum house trailer, and she worked in a jukebox saloon, and she spent all the money that I give her just to see the old man in the moon. I used to sleep at the foot of Old Glory and awake in the dawn's early light. But much to my surprise, when I opened my eyes, I was a victim of the Great Compromise.
Here with my nephew Scruff. Get a pencil and write down an important address. It's for the new McGruff activity book.
And it's full of me.
The address is
Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
Hey, Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
Scruff McGruff, Chicago.
tells you what to do about guns and about bullies and drugs and about strangers who want to give you a ride. Games and puzzles, too. So for your free copy of my new comic activity book, just write
Scrub, Scrub, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
Not bad.
Can I do it again?
One more time.
Scrub, Scrub, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
You'll be helping me take a bite out of crime.
A public service message from this station, the U.S. Department of Justice, the Crime Prevention Coalition, and the Ad Council.
Everyone loves listening to music, but have you ever stopped to think about why it's great for kids to learn to play music? Hi, I'm Darius Rucker from Hootie and the Blowfish. These days, it seems people focus way too much on the economics of school music instead of an amazing positive effect it has on kids. It's such a thrill for a child when he or she gets the first instrument or masters a simple part on the flute or performs a showstopper with a school chorus. And there's so much music out there to play and listen to. When kids learn to appreciate a show tune, a Beethoven symphony, or an opera, in addition to what they hear on the radio, it only opens their young minds to the diversity of the world around them. Make sure your kids learn to love music. Support your school music program.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore America's voice through music education. March is Music in Our Schools Month.
All right, we're back. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On for a Tuesday night and some invigorating conversation radio we're having right now. And you're, of course, welcome to join in it. 877, the number 4, Head On, 877-443-2366. Let's go to Maine. Our friend David from Maine is with us. Hey, David, you're Head On.
Good evening, Bob. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Yourself?
I'm doing all right. Well, I guess I could say Casper's now a ghost and the card has been pulled.
Oh, very well. That well said.
And I just wanted to say something about what you were talking about. The Republicans playing chess, they're too stupid to play chess. They play Texas Hold'em poker, and we are playing, and the Democrats are playing Uno.
Okay, well, that works too.
The Democrats need to start playing chess because I believe that this, Lionel was talking about this on the show, too. This is a syndrome that everybody says. Everything, and you were talking about it about 3 weeks ago. Something happens, and they're like, oh, okay, I see what Rove is doing. I see what Melman is doing. They're not doing anything. It's all a damn bluff. And people need to realize that. It's all a dumb bluff. I mean, these people don't plan out their lives like that. They like spending at the wind.
Just... And everything and everything is just a one card turn for them. Is that what you're telling me?
I'm basically telling you that everything is just a big bluff. That's what the biggest. I was watching a documentary on that. A documentary that has is parallel to that. Enron, the smartest guys in the room.
Yeah, sure.
And I don't know if you've seen it, but Jeff Skillings was this big time risk guy. He did the mountain biking thing.
Yeah.
He was always in extreme sports. He would always be betting, losing money. That's what these guys are. There is no strategy. I bet you if you look at the bills of Cheney, and you look at the bills of Bush, and you look at the bills of all the neocons, you're going to see a pattern here. You're going to see a recklessness, abandonment of everything. Because once you're at the top, you need an adrenaline rush, and they're just like Jeff Skillings.
Well, if that's the case, David, I have no reason to take issue with you on this. Then it becomes even more perplexing, at least to me, why we can't stop this crap.
Well, I think part of the problem is like you start to see Chris Matthews having a conscience, and that's refreshing.
Yeah, it is refreshing.
But I know what he's doing.
And that's where my cynicism kicks in, David.
He realizes, to quote Tom Waits, the ship is sinking. The ship is singing. God's away on business.
Yeah, and so he understands that with the president's popularity at around 30%, that there's no more market in kissing Bush's butt. So of course he's going to go in the other direction.
And you know, I keep trying to tell people, and they don't realize it. All these bumper stickers and all this support, they are supporting one of the biggest. This administration is. There's no way this administration can survive all these scandals. I think that this is ordained by God for them to go down. I really do. So I say, just bring another scandal on, God. Just bring another scandal on. I just wanted to pile on and wait.
And I understand. And I saw Agnes found it. A blog entry that was like, you know, five, six, you know, it looked like it probably would have come to five pages. Just this interminable list of scandals that we have had to put up with since George Bush took office.
I mean, can you believe the new memo?
I know. That's what I'm getting at. When do we get to the smoking gun part, David?
And I guess I need to read the book Cobra too, because everyone's telling me to read that.
Well, that's where the business about Dick Cheney telling William Cohen that all he wanted to hear about was Iraq. That's
all
where that comes from.
And it makes you wonder if 2000, then he takes over War Games. I'm not a big time conspiracy theorist, but.
Well, there's you mentioned War Games. I ran into an article today. I don't know if I even printed it or not, but it was someone had sent it to me, and lo and behold, there it is. Well, no, it was at WD40.com. That's where the link is. This is one of these strategery types who says that he expects that the United States will in fact bomb Iran in the next 6 to 9 months.
And speaking of, guess who got to meet Cheney?
Who?
Sander Hicks. The guy who was the publisher behind Skull Press?
Yeah, sure.
Fortunate Son?
Yeah.
He actually met Cheney, and guess what he asked him?
What?
He was playing a GOP operative, and he actually asked him, and he said, Mr. Cheney, he's acting like really frantic. He's like, Mr. Cheney, what do I say if people say 9/11 is an inside job?
Oh, no. Did Cheney respond?
Yeah, he did. He looked at him blankly. He said it was the weirdest, strangest look, because he didn't even expect it, and he said, tell them it's not true.
God. Oh, my God.
God bless Sander Hicks. Did you know he also, I love reading his blog. I just found out about it. I'll have to send you the link to it.
Yeah, do please.
But I just found out that he actually infiltrated the Elliott Spitzer Democrat Convention press conference or whatever. And he stood up and he said, when are we going to have anything about 9/11? We have not had a real investigation. People in the room just separated. They couldn't believe he said it, but afterwards, this is the craziest thing. This is what I keep telling people. Just because people don't mention it, that's the elephant in the room, people.
Well, it is. It is. The only and I come back to this, David, and I don't want to put anybody off. I'm not satisfied that we were given the skinny on 9/11. I'm not satisfied in the least. I don't know. I've got my own suspicions, but the thing that just scares the absolute life out of me is the fact that, you know, while we're turned around looking over our shoulders at 9/11, they're planning the next one, brother.
Right, but people need to realize that we're never going to find out the answers of 9/11. It's always going to be blurry. It's always going to be a dispute. And we need to think about something else. If we had a Wayback Machine,
yeah,
like Peabody. And,
right, yeah, I want one so bad I can taste it.
If we had a Wayback Machine and we found out who... If we couldn't necessarily change the events, but if we could find out who, let's just say we brought that back to the facts. What do you think this would do to this country if you put everything out there on the national news? Do you realize that everything in this country would completely change, the structure
would
change?
There's one side of me that says that everything would change, and there is another side of me that says nothing would change. I don't know if the American people are that far up out of their coma, David, to be quite honest with you. I'm sorry, but, you know.
If you had a video of Cheney in the war room, is what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah.
What I'm saying is it would create this virtual type of anarchy in the urban and mass populated areas. So what I'm saying to people is this. You're not getting what you ask for because it would create a chain reaction of something not positive. You have to keep on a different track now.
I think absolutely. Absolutely. I think you're absolutely correct on that. Because, you know, you're a little bit younger than I am.
Right.
This is, you see, 9/11 is your JFK.
You know what? I'll put it to terms that kids, that people my age can understand. 9/11 is our graphic novel.
Yeah, it is. It absolutely. Yes. That's a great analogy, David. We got to get out of here. We're at the top of the hour.
All right, Bob.
All right, take care now. Bye. And we will be back. If you want to jump in, 877, the number 4, head on. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Head on Radio News, I'm Bruce Birch. George Bush took a discard Tuesday. White House Chief of Staff Andrew Card tendered his resignation. In Washington circles, Card was one of the most well-liked and trusted members of the Bush administration. Card will be replaced by Josh Bolton, known for his almost obsessive secrecy. A group of retired generals and admirals is calling for Tony Scalia to recuse himself. The Washington Post reports that the group wants Scalia to recuse himself from a case that will determine whether human beings at the Guantanamo Bay concentration camp have constitutional rights. On March 8th, the notorious Supreme Court justice prejudged the case, telling an audience in Switzerland that no such rights applied to the prisoners. Scalia has a history of prejudging cases and staying in them. Last year, he refused to get off of a case involving Vice President Dick Cheney, even though he's enjoyed a lengthy social relationship with Cheney. Bad news for the Gulf Coast from FEMA. The Emergency Management Department says residents in the area can expect another round of rapid evacuations as the 2006 hurricane season approaches. The presence of travel trailers used as emergency shelters will play a big part. People living in them will have to evacuate even for a Category 1 storm because they're unsafe. Students are leading the way in the fight against Republican proposals to deal with so-called illegal immigrants. Students walked out of classes all across the U.S. today to protest the way Republicans are characterizing them, their parents, and their loved ones. Some Republicans want to make felons of every so-called illegal in America. An estimated 11 million people are in the U.S. without governmental permission. Turnout was weaker than expected for Israel's parliamentary elections on Tuesday. Just the same, Acting Prime Minister Ehud Olmert's Kadima Party is expected to win a majority in the new government. The Labour Party is expected to win 22 of the 120 seats, putting it in second place behind Kadima's 29. The two parties will have to form a coalition government. Interest rates continued to rise Tuesday. The Federal Reserve boosted the interest rate by a quarter of a point. The increase is the 15th straight since June of 2004. The Fed says it may have to continue raising interest rates. Both stock and bond prices sank on the news. Where in the world is Charles Taylor? No, it's not a new geography game. It's the question being asked in Nigeria and Liberia following Taylor's disappearance from his residence in exile in Nigeria. Taylor disappeared just after Nigeria agreed to turn him over to Liberia for possible trial on human rights charges. Taylor is also wanted for war crimes in Sierra Leone. This is News on the Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.
Now, Mrs. Johnson, before we close on your mortgage loan, I want to make sure you remember Mike.
Hi. You can trust me. I'm African-American, just like you.
So, here's the low monthly payments and interest rates we promised, and here's where they triple.
The rest of this stuff is just here to make sure that we get your house when you can't pay us back.
What a lovely house.
Predatory lenders are never this easy to spot. Call us at 866-222-FAIR and protect yourself with the facts. A public service announcement brought to you by the National Fair Housing Alliance and the Ad Council.
More bad press for Halliburton. Representative Henry Waxman released a new report Tuesday cataloging numerous taxpayer ripoffs by the company that still pays Dick Cheney. The report deals with Halliburton's conduct under the second Iraqi oil contract. It details the company run amok and graft. According to the report, in one case, the company tried to overcharge American taxpayers by some $26 million. It was another blow for the Bush administration in Iraq Tuesday. A Shiite coalition backed out of peace talks sponsored by the U.S. The group quit over a weekend raid by U.S. forces that left at least 20 Iraqis dead. The problem was made worse because Iraqi troops who participated in the raid with the U.S. were under the command of the Sunni-run Iraqi Defense Department. The U.S. military denies responsibility for the slaughter. In related news, at least 19 more people were kidnapped in Baghdad Tuesday. Abdul Rahman is apparently a free man. Rahman, charged with apostasy in the Afghan democracy, was released Monday. He immediately went into hiding. Rahman is seeking asylum in the West. The United Nations is assisting. Not a single fundamentalist organization in the United States has offered to take in the persecuted Christian. Two members of the Reagan administration went to their rewards Tuesday. Former Reagan spokesman Lynn Nofziger died of cancer at his home in Virginia. He was 81 years old. Nofziger was a longtime Reagan family insider, serving the Reagans since 1965. Former Reagan Defense Secretary Caspar Weinberger also shuffled off this mortal coil Tuesday. Weinberger died of pneumonia in Bangor, Maine. Weinberger achieved his greatest notoriety as part of the group of Reagan administration servants who helped to trade arms to Iran and illegally sent the profits to support the terrorist Nicaraguan Contras. Caspar Weinberger was 88 years old. For Head On Radio Network News, I'm Bruce Birch.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Right here. And we do have an hour to go. Plenty of time left to get the bee out from under your bonnet, the burr out from under your saddle. If you are so inclined, I welcome you to do so. You heard the phone number there. And, of course, email's always welcome. It's a little bit more dicey for me to check it tonight simply because I'm wearing two hats, Agnes having taken the night off. But you're welcome. You're welcome to ship it in. And what I don't reply to on the air, I will certainly try to make some sort of reply off air. Bob@headonradio.com is how you do that. And, like I said, you're more than welcome to do so. All right, back to the phones right away. Because he's been waiting forever and ever and ever, it's our buddy Rick in Panama City, Florida. Hey, Rick, you're Head On.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
I'm all right, you?
I'm on the nod, man.
Fading out on hold, are you?
Yeah, well, between that and my medication. But I'm going to try to approach this. I want to say something about parties and politicians,
mm-hmm.
and people's beliefs, and the American way.
Okay.
And so I guess I got to start out with a statement, and, you know, if I run too long, just say, Rick, stop.
No, that's okay.
Okay, man. Here's my situation. Here's where I see it. Did anybody see The Truman Show, the movie The Truman Show?
Oh, I'm very well familiar with it.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of like what we're in. Everybody's in on this deal. Except us. See, the fact of the matter is...
We're in the Truman role.
Yeah, exactly. And the fact of the matter is that your party lies to you. The Democratic Party lies to me, it lies to you, and it lies to everybody down the line. Just like the Republican Party lies to you, lies to me, and everybody down the line. So they get together and they sort of play their part. Good cop. Bad cop.
Well, see, I can get some of that, Rick, but I don't necessarily get it all the way through. I mean, I look at what Austin.
Give me an example.
I look at what the Democratic Party politics is, and I don't feel like I'm being lied to in it because I stand
what?
For most. I don't feel like I'm being lied to. I feel like I stand for most of what the Democratic Party ostensibly stands for. Now, do they
which
do it?
Which is what? When we're talking party leadership, which is what?
Well, there's a platform and leadership are different things.
Well, wait, let's not split hairs here.
I'm not splitting hairs.
Let's talk about the Democratic Party. And the Democratic Party, of which everybody is familiar with, that ever gets to see on the news in any other soundbite, are the people that are in charge, correct?
Yeah, okay, well, for the sake of argument, I'll go with that.
Okay, and so if they're doing their part, if the Lieberman, if the Pelosi's, if the Hillary
okay,
Clinton,
now,
all them are doing their part.
Now, wait a minute, though.
The big
you have just identified the party leadership as Joseph Lieberman, Nancy Pelosi, and Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, I'm identifying them as the visible, the ones the media caters to. I'm not talking about Howard Dean.
Okay, well, yeah, because we know that every time a camera light goes on, Joseph Biden can't be far behind.
That's right. I'm not talking about the people like Howard Dean, or our friend from Ohio, or, you know, I'm not talking about the people that actually care about the party. I'm talking about the leadership in the media, okay? The Biden, the Hillary Clinton, and the ones that I mentioned before. They get up and they turn around and play their part. What they're doing is they're Democrat light. They turn around and they make amends, or they find a way to water down the opposition's argument by simply capitulation. I've seen them do it over and over again, and certainly you have too, where there'll be an absolute apostasy, and then they'll turn around and explain away everything our enemy has done through some kind of a capitulatory statement or a, well, you got to go along to get along. They do it constantly.
Oh, I'm in touch with a lot of that. We've been talking about Casper Weinberger a little bit, Rick. Who was it? And it was mentioned on this. Was it mentioned on this show? Katherine Graham at the Washington Post during the Iran-Contra scandal, declaring that the American people could not stand to see America torn apart with another impeachment debate.
Well, yeah, I mean,
I
thank her so much for speaking for me.
Can you imagine?
I could really stand to see my country torn apart by an impeachment. I mean, I sat through the whole situation and fought hard to try to get some kind of sanity in that whole Clinton impeachment. You couldn't get it done. Nobody cared. And let me tell you, I was never a friend to a Bill Clinton in
my
life.
No, but 60, at the same time that the House managers were screaming that the flag was falling, do you recall, Rick, that 67% of the American people said leave the man alone?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do, because Americans loved him, because he had a presidential quality which Bush does not have.
And he was smart.
Yes. Yes, he was.
Now, but see, was, compare that with what we've got now, Rick.
But he was an SOB to his constituents.
You've got 52% of the American people who say that if it can be proved to them that George Bush lied us into the Iraq War, that he should, in fact, be impeached. Now, that is a far cry from 67% of the American people saying leave Bill Clinton the hell alone over a consensual sex act.
Well, yeah, but unfortunately, it's not breaking across party lines as much as it should be.
Well,
margin of error is in there, and it puts us right back where it's always been, a divided nation since 2000. Nothing's changed.
A divided nation since the day this nation was founded. But I mean, that's
no, a divided nation since 2000 was since this son of a bitch, excuse my French,
we'll let that one
stole
slide.
And had a bloodless coup and ripped off this nation with his freaky pals. I mean, that's what happened.
I know, but by the same, what I'm getting at is the same way that Katherine Graham, and this is trending toward your point with regard to the so-called visible Democrats. I wish Dennis Kucinich wasn't so invisible. I wish Sherrod Brown in Ohio wasn't so invisible. But I guess they're running campaigns or something right now. But anyway, those visible Democrats you're talking about probably still have the same mindset that Katherine Graham had, because again, it's a classic, and you know, this isn't Republican, this isn't Democrat. If the Greens were the party in power, they would have please don't delude yourself, Rick. They would have the same calculus in mind. Can we please not talk about this? I've got an election to run.
Well, I disagree on one thing. I don't think that there's anything that's altruistic or wonderful or honorable about the visible Democrats. I think they're traitors. I think they are hurting this party and hurting this nation. I think they are in bed with big money and the Republican Party, and they prove it every single day. I think Joseph Lieberman is a capo.
Well, yeah, sure. I can't go with Joe Lieberman being some sort of representative, okay?
Can't go with Joe Lieberman being a representative, for Pete's sake. The guys were... I mean, dare I say it, this guy has been on the entire Republican side of trying to orchestrate and send our kids in to go fight Israel's war. I mean, dare I say it?
Well, no, dare. But what I'm trying to tell you is Joe Lieberman is not the Democratic Party by any wild stretch of the imagination.
Democratic Party to America.
No, he's not.
The undecided, the borderline,
get out
the
there,
Reagan Democrats.
Get out there. Well, the Reagan Democrats don't, there's no such thing because they don't vote Democrat.
They would if they didn't have people like Lieberman crossing the aisle every 5 seconds.
Well, I understand your point, but, you know, I really can't see him. Okay, this is...
He is an
wait.
Object in the destruction of America.
This is Joseph Lieberman from March 24th, Rick. Okay, this is after George came out and said, well, you know, I'm not going to worry about it. I broke it, and I'm going to walk away from it, and some other president will have to deal with the Reich. Okay, you remember when that happened?
Yes.
Okay.
Only days ago.
Yeah, well, this was Joe Lieberman's response to that.
We're talking about 2006, 7, 8, that's 3 years, and I believe that a lot of very good things can happen in 3 years in Iraq that ideally would allow us to remove every American soldier who's there today.
That's rhetoric.
Sure it is.
So what?
I mean, you know, but what I'm trying to say is you're using Joe Lieberman as some sort of benchmark standard for the Democratic Party. I don't think he's a Democrat. That's why Ned Lamont, the millionaire that he is running against him in the primary in Connecticut.
Excuse me, Bob, but every time the cameras come on, Lieberman and the other freak from Delaware, where the hell he is, Mr. Capital One and all these guys and Hillary Clinton, those are the ones they focused on. They're not focusing on Dennis Kucinich.
But that's not the American people's choice, Rick. That's what the mainstream media does.
But the American people's choice, because the American people's choice makes their vote on a soundbite if they can get through the polls without being busted by the cops for child support. That's what, I mean, this is what I'm talking about. These people that are being featured as the Democratic leadership, Democratic Party.
Joe Lieberman still has some notion, Rick, that he's got his Joe Mentum going, and he thinks he's going to run for president in 2008. Yes, he does. The same thing goes for Joe Biden. He has presidential ambitions. The same thing goes for Hillary Clinton. She has presidential ambitions, and
that's
the mainstream media...
the only one that is actually taking it seriously. Everybody else has been disqualified by their behavior, and they know it.
Have they?
Yes, they have, because they have shown themselves to be so blatantly partisan.
Bill Frist diagnosed Terry Schiavo on videotape, Rick, and he won a straw poll and is the front runner for the Republican nomination.
That's a joke. It's a lie.
I'm glad it's a joke. It's a joke that's being perpetrated on us, these guys search out the cameras, Rick, but it is the mainstream media that is the willing accomplice in this.
The only thing that's happening with Bill Frist is look at my right hand, not my left hand, so you won't see what I'm doing. Frist is a straw man argument in this. He's not the Republican nominee.
That's McCain then.
No, it's between McCain and Allen. That's who.
No Giuliani?
No, Giuliani can't get it. Giuliani is more likely to get drafted by the Democrats than ever be run Republicans, unless it ever gets so down to the low that they'll actually try to run them, because they'll have to do it against Hillary Clinton. If Hillary Clinton gets the nod, there's always a slight chance that Giuliani will get the Republican nod. And then they'll claim they held their nose as they voted. And Giuliani would win. Everybody can beat Hillary Clinton. But let me try to just focus on this one thing. And that is this, is that we are being played. We are being played by these people in the top echelon parts of our party.
Absolutely.
And if we don't accept that, and I mean keep accepting this dreck that they keep feeding us, we're going to lose again and again. These people are harbingers.
Wait a minute.
Error.
Wait, I'm really trying here, Rick. We're getting played.
Well, if I'm not making myself clear,
No. You're not. It's not that you're not making yourself clear. It's that you're going to a place that I don't think. Okay, let me try, because apparently I'm failing too. Sure, we're getting played. We're absolutely getting played. And there is nothing new in it. As long as there have been political parties in this country, which is almost as long as there's been this country, we've been getting played. That is a given. But
never has there been such a desperate time as today.
Well, sure. But what I'm getting, what I'm trying to get to here is that I hear in some of your argument, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, I remember in the 2000 election cycle when the Naderites went around screaming that there was no difference between Al Gore and George Bush. Nothing could have been further from the truth.
Absolutely.
With if Al Gore is inaugurated in January of 2001, I am as sure of it as I am of the fact that the sun will rise tomorrow, if not for me, for the rest of the world, or you know, whatever. I am absolutely certain that there would be no 9/11.
I'm guaranteed it would, there would have been no 9/11 because
there's no there would be no 9/11.
That's right.
There would be no Iraq War.
That's right.
There would be no Halliburton scandal.
That's right.
You know, I can tick it off and until I've got to take my shoes off and start working with toes.
But what would not be going on
in this country. And what you're doing, if I can finish my point, you're making the same argument that the Naderites made in 2000, that there's fundamentally no difference between the Democrats and the Republicans, and that we're getting gamed by both sides.
But if you are, I mean, okay, fine. Okay, so it's a given, you are. So what do you do about it? You don't let somebody stick somebody in the primary that's going to game you. You turn around and rally the party to put somebody in the primary that you believe in.
Primary filings are over.
Huh?
Primary filings are over for 06.
For 06,
yeah,
yes.
But what I mean, I'm trying to, okay, this is...
Oh, okay, you want to concentrate on 06.
This is a conversation that we are having
vote
among...
For everybody that's...
This is a conversation we're having as progressives among progressives.
Yes.
Okay? This is, I like to think that this is us trying to sort out some issues among ourselves. On the other hand, however, I would hate for some god-awful Republican to hear this.
Oh, okay.
Because
you think it's inside baseball?
This is inside baseball to us. These are the kind of discussions we as Democrats have to have. But by the same token, if we, you know...
We got to have them in public, Bob, because the people out there that are just joining this show for the first time tonight got to know that they're being had. They can't be allowed to believe in the lies. I mean, Howard Dean's the best thing that's happened to this party in a long time.
Yes.
And yet everybody that watches the news thinks he's a lunatic, okay?
Because they play him for that.
Again and again and again just to prove it. I mean, they've got to know that there's other people out there that think like them, that they're, well, maybe, just maybe, the guy has something going on. And maybe, just maybe, Dennis Kucinich has a lot going on. And maybe, just maybe, that these people that are in charge right now, the high-value targets that the media feeds them every day, are not good for them. And we've got to talk about it. We've got to have big brass cojones, man.
Well, I understand it, I'm with you in many senses on this, but I am terrified. I am terrified that as disgusted as I am with my party, I am really, really not up for whoever the Bush administration is going to pick to succeed them. I am not.
Me
I mean, you
either.
Want to talk? You want
and
to talk about 08?
I am talking about this.
And what you know?
Because
but
if we don't, pick our candidates. They're going to pick them for us.
And we're Democrats, we're progressives, we're thinking people, and we have this kind of a discussion. I mean, just to give you an example, okay? And I'm not saying anything on the air that I wouldn't obviously say to someone's face. We run as one of our sister programs on the Head On Radio Network. Our good friends Grayson Rama.
Uh-huh.
Rama is very active in the Green Party in Vermont. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And he was talking Sunday evening about, you know, quit voting for Democrats. And I gotta admit that just made the little hairs stand up on my neck. Because if you're gonna vote for a third party candidate for something besides alderman or city council or county commissioner or county surveyor or maybe state representative in the state house, we are actively playing into the hands of the people that we despise.
Absolutely, I agree. That's why I don't advocate a third party. That's how they split the vote before. Actually, that's how Clinton won. to be honest with you.
Well, that, yeah, the Perot factor, but then you turn around and you get the Ralph Nader factor.
I'm advocating a third party. I'm advocating cleaning up our own party and having the guts to run good, solid American Democrat candidate.
Okay, then if that's the focus of your argument, Rick, then you've got, you know, CB says that the only thing that matters is impeachment. But if that is the focus of your argument, then one other thing matters besides impeachment. And the one thing that you're going to have to burn the phone lines and the internet and the roads up with is public funding of campaigns. Because if you don't like Joe Lieberman, and if you don't like Joe Biden, and you don't like Hillary Clinton, and any other number of filthy rich Democrats, then the only way you're ever going to get those people that you're talking about wanting to run for office and those people that you want to have an opportunity to vote for, the only way that's going to ever happen is if we get public funding of campaigns and people and someone besides well-heeled rich people having a realistic shot at getting into office.
That's indoctrination. I suggest you rewatch Brewster's Millions, okay? People, if they believe in something, and if they believe the person is righteous and straight up, they will side behind him. Let me remind you about Martin Luther King. Let me remind you about people that have led through our generations.
Let me remind you that they shot Martin Luther King, and they shot Bobby Kennedy, and they shot John Kennedy.
Yes, they did. Yes, they absolutely did. But they still made an impact, and people to this day love them and care about them and pray for them. I'm telling you, we can't be the kind of party that's going to have to be afraid all the time to stand up for ourselves. I mean, Ted Kennedy does it every single day in the Senate. God bless him. He does it every day, and he's a big joke. Nobody takes a break at taking a joke at this guy. He's one of the finest Americans that have ever lived. And yet he stays there no matter what they do to him, and he puts out work that is good. And now it's even starting to look like he will be forced to compromise. I mean, if we don't take a stand and start standing behind our good people and running new people to run
against
the bad
people,
well, then I need,
you know, among other
things, we're doomed.
I need Rick's list of good people.
Rick's list of good people. Ted Kennedy, Dennis Kucinich, that fellow from, what's that, South Carolina, that governor? I like him, okay? Let me see, who else? I like Sam Cedar.
I like Sam, too. He ain't in the office.
Yeah, but he could run. You could get Sam to run. If he had thought he had a half a chance, if he would back him, he would run, and that'd be one beautiful thing. I like Harry Belafonte.
You want the people that you feel like you can actually believe in power, and God,
that's
am I with
right.
you.
I want,
I'm with you on that, Rick.
I want to be able to believe in my elected official that actually has a soul and a conscience and believes he'll go to hell if he does something wrong. Yes, I do.
Well, I'm with you on that. I don't know how we necessarily get that outside
we
of public funding
like
of campaigns.
We get rid of Lieberman and the freak from Delaware and all these and Hillary Clinton that has destroyed this party. If we run these people again, we're sealing our fate.
Well, I mean, they're state offices, so there's not much that a guy in Florida or a guy in West Virginia can do about what goes on in Delaware.
Come on, we can send money and we can send letters.
Yeah, sure. And who's running? You know, who's running against Joe Biden?
Well, until you get past Capital One, nobody.
Right. I mean, just like the senators from Michigan used to be referred to as the senators from General Motors.
Look at the beautiful people that are running against Lieberman and have a great shot at doing it.
Mm-hmm.
How do you explain that phenomenon?
Well, Ned Lamont took the pulse of the people of Connecticut and realized that he has a shot at unseating Lieberman in the primary.
That's right. Well, a powerful senator, a veteran powerful senator, and here's this guy. He's actually not a shot.
No, don't call him this guy, Rick. He's a multi freaking millionaire.
Yes, but he
from the telecommunications industry. Hey,
I understand, and I know he's probably doing it for all the wrong reasons. But getting rid of Lieberman is just like a birthday present or a warm hug from your mother. You just got to have it.
Yeah, well, you know, Lieberman's already planning to try to run some sort of independent write-in campaign if he loses the primary. I mean,
yeah, he's already been invited by Hannity to join the Republican Party right on TV. Did you see that?
Yeah. Yeah, I did. You know, and how interesting that this is a guy who was vilified by that scumbucket for however many months, 6 months, 5 months, 4 months.
Yeah.
During the 2000 presidential campaign.
Ho hum, ho hum. Well, you know.
No, but I understand what you're getting at. I would like to feel good about my elected representatives. I'm right there with you. I don't know that we get to, though. You want to hear me be a hard ass, Rick? Here's how you get people that you can believe in office. And I say this to the Republican and the Democratic Party alike.
Go ahead.
It's what I said about Randy Duke Cunningham. You craft a law that says nobody takes nothing from nobody else, not a damn nickel, and if we catch you doing it, it's a death penalty.
I'll go for that.
Then you will get honest men and women in your Congress.
Yes, you would. But I think we can do it a little bit softer. I think we can simply just say we need to believe in our people. Look, Congressman, well, what's that congressman, that black guy there, a congressman?
John Conyers.
What a beautiful spirit. What a wonderful American human being.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the standard.
John Conyers, Charlie Rangel, John Lewis, the entire Congressional Black Caucus.
That's the standard. That chick from Georgia.
Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
Yeah.
From Florida. Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
That's the standard. We want them. We can believe in them. Those are the right people. That's the gold standard. We need them. That's what you can have faith in America about. That's what makes you feel with those prickly hairs on the back of your neck when you hear the national anthem. It's that. They set that gold standard.
Well, you know, you're speaking to a yearning that exists in the American body politic, Rick. You honest to God are.
Well, we need it, and we can't get there from here.
But
we
quit acting, please, I beg of you, quit acting like the Democratic Party is a foregone conclusion. I'm not telling you what to say or what to think, but stop a minute before you say things like, we're getting gamed, okay? If we're getting gamed, we're getting gamed by the system.
You got to take me at my word. We're getting gamed at the powerful elite that is outside the party, but yet is entrusted as the party in the media that everybody's seeing.
Right, and who you're talking about is the Bob Shrums over. Is it Bob Shrum over at the Democratic Leadership Council? That's who you're talking about.
Exactly.
You're not talking about anybody who stands for election.
I am talking about those that serve the beast. As simple as that.
Yeah.
And we know who they are, and we gotta say so. If we don't say so, we're gonna lose. Again and again.
But by the same token, I come back to what I said. When you go to that we're getting gamed thing, you are making the same argument as the Naderites made in 2000.
Well, if the shoe fits.
And if they were wrong then, they are wrong now.
They weren't wrong.
Yeah, they were wrong. There was a hell of a difference between
Gore. They weren't wrong.
Yes, they were, Rick. There was a hell of a difference between Gore and George Bush.
No, that isn't exactly what they meant.
They said there is no difference between George Bush and Al Gore, that the Democratic and Republican parties are opposite sides of the same coin. I heard it said again and again and again.
Yes, in the sense, if you're going to talk powerful leadership.
But we are going, but see, that's the thing. This is not a nuance issue. If you say that it's the same thing, then you've got a whole bunch of people that are going to run off and vote green and throw their votes away.
No way. I would never recommend that at all because...
No, you're not recommended, but indirectly, Rick, my brother, you are.
No, what I'm recommending is we throw the bums out. We throw the bums out. Or we strike. We strike. One or the other. You can't have it both ways. Or you capitulate and have business as usual. And then I'm throwing your health care out, and then I'm cut your wages, and then I make sure you can't afford a car or a gallon of gas. We can do it. We can go along to get along. We can do that. Or you can strike, or you can put some...
Well, yeah, okay, voter strike. Which election do you want us to bail out of, Rick?
What I want us to do is to have the audacity as a party to pick and choose new candidates
that will beat, and they'll beat them if they're honest, if they're real, and if they've talked truth to the American people, these scumbags like Lieberman and that freak from Delaware and Hillary Clinton, and just give us a shot at running good, honest citizens who believe in democratic principles.
How about Ben Nelson? How about Ben Nelson in Nebraska?
Huh? You know,
Ben Nelson in Nebraska. Got to get rid of him too. I mean,
exactly.
look at the number of people who voted against cloture, and then voted against Samuel Alito once they knew that it was safe for them to oppose him because they knew that he was going to be confirmed.
Well, I mean, these people are not our friends. They're our enemies. They are traitors. They have to go. And we have, you know, we got to have a little faith in the American public. Yes, there's a lot of people in on the ether, but there's a lot of people that are waking up. And if you just run good, honest citizens that are going to do the right thing. I mean, I always said my favorite form of government is a Republican president and a Democratic Congress and Senate. That way everybody gets a little bit. But it's too late for that now because the office has been destroyed by Bush. What we need right now is across-the-board Democratic situation just to clean up this mess so we can undo this damage. And we're going to need it for about 10 or 15 years undoing this filth that has been written in this Congress and this Senate and addressed by these executive orders. And the only way you can entrust that kind of job to a Democrat is they got to be real Democrats and not fake Republican lights.
I'm all for it. I'm absolutely all for it.
And so, therefore, let us start getting rid of these guys and firing them, because you can't get there from here. We have to have the guts to run good, honest, straight-up Democratic Americans and to beat these guys.
Well, we gave that little abbreviated heroes list, Rick. Maybe those are the people we talk to. Maybe you talk to Kucinich and Debbie Wasserman Schultz and John Lewis and John Conyers, and you say, for God's sakes, guys, please help us identify people in different districts. You know, Democrats are ghettoized enough in the House as it is now. I guarantee you that Dennis Kucinich or any one of those people I mentioned to you would say no.
Well, if they
because,
say no.
No, they would say no because until they have some majority back, they can't do anything.
Huh. Well, then I don't know what to say, because if Dennis Kucinich and Conyers and McKinney,
do you honestly think that Cynthia McKinney is going to go into a district with a mugwump Democrat and campaign against her brother or sister in the House of Representatives? It ain't going to happen.
Well, they could at least campaign against the Republicans.
Well, sure they can, but the thing is, you're talking about throwing some Democrat bums out, Rick.
Well, yeah, I am. I am. And if they're too afraid to do that, then they bought into the Republican Kool-Aid.
No, it has nothing to do with the Kool-Aid. It has to do with the notion of the greater good.
The greater good.
Right now the greater good is getting a Democratic majority in both houses of Congress.
Well, if you can do that with these half-assed people, well, I mean, I know which way I'm going to be voting. I mean, I'm an independent, a registered independent. My whole family is. We burned our cards the night of the election after the results came in.
Yeah.
And we went out the next day and we registered Democrats. Or independents, but we're still Democrats. And we'll vote Democrat across the board. But here's the point. You want to
hear me say something that's going to absolutely turn your stomach?
Go ahead.
If Hillary Clinton is the Democratic nominee for the presidency of the United States in 2008, I will vote for her.
You'll lose. You'll lose.
Well, I know that.
You lose because there's not what? One of us in the
vote. I'll damn sure lose if I vote for some green. I got two choices in 2008, Rick.
No, you have more choices than that.
No. I am real time, Rick. If it
I'm real time.
If it comes down, Rick. If it comes down to Hillary Clinton versus Bill Frist, or Hillary Clinton versus the Rudy Giuliani, or Hillary Clinton versus John McCain, or Hillary Clinton versus some chimpanzee with an R behind his name, I am damned well voting for Hillary Clinton. Now, I will bust my little white ass to keep Hillary Clinton from being the nominee.
I hope so. I mean, but some, you know, you call me crazy, man, but I voted for Harry Brown. I couldn't vote for Gore, and I couldn't vote for Bush, because there was nothing American about either one of them.
Dear God, Rick, you're in Florida. Don't say that.
We've had this discussion before when I first introduced myself.
Yeah, I know.
You know
we
the
have.
Very reason why I couldn't vote for Gore, unless you don't remember.
I'm struggling here. I mean, I'm kind of head up right now.
Okay, right up to either the first or second debate, they asked him up to what point would he vote to abort a child, and he said right up to the moment of delivery. And he lost me right there, because I am not a pro-birth Democrat. I'm a pro-life Democrat.
Yeah, but that's just a stupid answer on his part. The answer to that question is, at what point would... And the answer to that question is, it ain't none of my damn business. I ain't got no uterus.
That's right. That's the proper answer, and I wouldn't have had a problem with that. But when he said that, and the questionnaire made him confirm it, he lost me. I couldn't vote for him. He gave me no place to go. I couldn't go for that. So I was stuck with, I couldn't vote for Bush. That would be outrageous, like voting for Adolf Hitler. I wasn't going to do it. So I voted for Harry Brown, Libertarian Party.
And one more vote in Florida went for Bush.
Yeah. This is what I'm trying to get across, is that we've got to have real Democrats with real cojones.
Well, look, here's what you... I mean, I keep...
Exactly the right thing instead of trying to say...
Rick, I keep hammering on 2006, but we're going to play in the fields of 2008. Here's your choice in 2008, Rick, and you better get used to it. Hillary Clinton, Joe Biden, okay? Maybe Mark Warner of Virginia? Possibly Wesley Clark? Possibly John Edwards? There is some rumblings about Tom Vilsack of Iowa.
John Edwards in a heartbeat. In a heartbeat, I would vote for John Edwards.
Oh, and by the way, John Kerry.
Never again.
I mean, you're not gonna get that dude or woman that you're talking about in 2008. You're not gonna get him.
But you already mentioned two candidates I could vote for easily, especially John Edwards. I could vote for him and sleep well at night every night afterwards. I mean, John Edwards is a fine man. He's one of the best things that ever happened in this party.
I would give anything to see, you know, as much as you may disagree, I would give anything to see Al Gore run in 2008.
I would vote for Al Gore in a heartbeat if he runs.
Because, you know, I was having this conversation with a friend of mine the other day.
He wouldn't say that again, because he knows how stupid it was.
Well,
because he doesn't really believe that. I already read up on it.
Let me get to this. I was having a conversation the other day with a buddy of mine, and we were talking about history and perspective, you know, because that is my little ugly little hang up. Okay. Everybody thinks about, you know, when you go back to the 1960 election, Rick, you've got Richard Nixon and
John F. Kennedy.
No, you won't have Richard Nixon to kick around anymore. And that was 1960.
Right.
When was he elected president?
Well, what was it, 67, 68?
68. It was 1968.
Yeah.
And those were Nixon's years in the wilderness, Rick. How long will it have been by the time this next election cycle comes along since Gore had the election stolen from him in 2000?
Well, he's
8 years. It's the same thing. If Richard Nixon can go into the wilderness for 8 years and come back and be president, so can Al Gore.
He can, but you got to understand something. It only fortifies my argument because he's grown up a lot. And I think the smacking around he got kind of gave him a little bit of street smarts and got him to be a little bit real.
Well, yeah, and as long as he's not out there hiring Donna Brazile and Bob Shrum and that crowd, or Mary Beth Cahill, who ran Kerry's campaign.
Or that alien-looking son of a gun who married that Republican wench.
Well, actually, James Carville's a pretty damn good strategist.
Screw him. Well, he's not our friend.
He knows how to win. But anyway, Rick, we're going to leave it at that because I do have one more call I want to get to.
All right. Thank you so much for the time.
Oh, my pleasure. I enjoy this stuff. We're on the same side of the fence. We just got to figure out, you know, how we get to the fence.
I know I'm wacky, you guys, but you got to take it for what it is. I care about this country. I really, really do. And I just love being a part of it.
Well, we know that, Rick. And
all right.
And we love having you part of this.
All right. Thank you so much.
Take care. Bye. And, hi, who have I got?
Wayne.
Hey, Wayne.
How you doing, buddy?
I'm all right.
I got to be brief. I just listened to Rick and, you know, I like to hear from him and all that. But, you know, besides having candidates with real cojones, we have to have Democratic voters for real cojones. And if Rick voted for Ed Brown, he voted for George W. Bush.
No, that's what I said.
You know, so Al Gore made a mistake. He answered a question wrong. You know, Rick said that if Al Gore said it wasn't none of his business, he'd have voted for him. Well, in effect, that's what he said. Maybe he didn't say it in the proper words. But, you know, if something like that is going to turn off Democratic voters and you're going to turn around and vote for a third-party candidate, you have to realize you voted for George Bush. And that's all I got to say, brother.
Well, no, I mean, don't you run off like that.
Okay.
Because you made the most trenchant observation you made, Wayne, is that we got to have voters with those cojones.
Yes, we do.
You know, and we touched on this a little bit last night.
There isn't a perfect candidate in the world.
No, there isn't.
Not a candidate that is going to answer every one of your questions or concerns exactly the way you want it to be answered.
And, you know, this goes back to Howard Dean's strategy about not conceding the South.
Exactly. Well, and I will agree with Rick, and, you know, I've said that before, and he just said it tonight, Howard Dean is the best thing that's happened to the Democratic Party in an awful long time.
And Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi are fighting him every step of the way.
Yes, they are.
And guess what? So's Bob Schrum.
Right.
And so is the entire, you know, I understand Rick's disgust with the inside players of the Democratic Party. I'm disgusted, too.
And so am I, and so are a lot of people.
We've got multimillionaire so-called campaign strategists who are oh for whatever. I mean, they have never won a damn race.
Well, exactly, and all these, you know, the Greens and all these third party things. I mean, hell, these people are wet dreams of the Republican Party.
Yeah,
I mean, they love them. I'm sure they probably find ways to fund them.
We know it. Look. We know that from the fact that the Bush campaign in 2004 funneled all the money it could possibly get into the Nader campaign.
Yeah, it did. That's exactly right.
And, you know, so now that's a failing of the Democratic Party to a certain extent, what I'm about to mention, Wayne. And that is, we have got to, my God, the people that are out there that are members of the Green Party, we have, as Democrats, failed them. Because we have not reached out to them. We have not made it plain that their issues are our issues. You know, what does the Green Party stand for that a Democrat doesn't?
I don't really know of one, to be honest with you.
I don't either. You know, if it's, you know, the word green is traditionally associated with a profound environmental consciousness, guess what? I'm still a registered Democrat, and I am hell-bent on environmental consciousness.
And I am, too.
And you and I have agreed that we don't have time to build a third party for our grandkids.
No.
Because
no, we
don't. Here's the news flash. As soon as you build a third party, guess what it turns into? The second party. Because whatever was the other, whatever party it replaces dies.
Exactly.
And you know, and it's not like it's never happened before in American history, because by God, that is the history of the Whigs.
Exactly. You got it. We got, you know, we have to concentrate on the elections. You know, there are many things to be disgusted about. But going to Greens or going to another party or trying to form another party is a waste of time.
You know, I want to see Democrats get back into power.
And I do, too.
And when
I think, you know,
And when they do get back into power, Wayne, I'm going to be a hell of a lot meaner to them than I've ever been, and I'm going to expect more of them than I have ever expected of a damn Republican.
Well, once they get in power, then they have no excuses. You can't tell me you can't have a committee meeting and you have to go down to the basement and you're not allowed to call the chairman chairman. You have to call him Congressman Connors. You know, now you're in power. You are the head of all the committees.
Yeah, and I do want John Conyers to turn the lights out on James Sensenbrenner just once for, you know, for symbolic value. But no, once that happens, then they got to start listening. I want public financing of campaigns.
And
the Democrats that won't get behind that, I will know, are absolutely as addicted as a smack addict is to the corporate money and the stuff that has filthied up our electoral process.
Well, exactly, too. And what's the term for the election progress where you pick first and second and third choice?
Instant runoff voting.
There you go. That is one hell of an idea as far as I'm concerned.
It's a brilliant idea. I watched it happen during the Democratic Party process. Interestingly enough, that yielded a projected Democratic nominee of Dennis Kucinich, but, you know.
Well, that just happened in Burlington, Vermont.
Did it?
Yes, I believe the mayoral race. Was it Burlington?
No, I missed it.
Okay, there. I'll make some phone calls and find out. Not right now, but...
Yeah, but
I believe it was in Burlington, Vermont. That is the process they use in their recent however you would say that.
Yeah.
For the mayor.
Right. That's how you'd say that.
Election.
Right.
So, I think that's an absolutely. I know it was Burlington.
But I've got
Peter Cavalli, who became mayor after Bernie Sanders, just recently. He didn't run again.
Yeah.
So.
Well, you know, like I said, I've got a list of stuff that I expect out of a Democratic majority.
Exactly. I mean, just like you say, you know, once we win the House again and possibly the Senate. I mean, listen, look what's happening. You know, we talked about this right after the election. You know, we get to watch these people self-destruct. And they are, I mean, they're, well.
Yeah, but we've got people that are afraid to take advantage of that, Wayne.
I realize that, Bob, but it's getting to a point where they're not even going to have to take advantage of it. All they're going to have to do is step over the body.
Well, I'd like to think you're right on that, but
some of them are probably afraid to do that. But
you know, but again, I go back to people like Tom Tancredo and Tom DeLay.
He lost his concealed
weapon permit.
I feel safer.
Yeah, sleep tight tonight, America. Tom DeLay can't go on a bender, you know, and start shooting the joint up. But no, we've got to have a conversation with the people in Tom Tancredo's district. We've got to have a conversation with the people in Tom DeLay's district and lay it out to them and say, this is what this SOB has done. Is that really what you voted for?
And, you know, and you've said it before, and I've agreed with you. We also have to have a, world for that sneeze.
Yeah.
We have to have a conversation with the Greens.
Yeah.
You know.
I want them on board. You know, if they want to stand out.
Please don't waste your vote.
Yeah. I mean, no. Go out there and get yourself an alderman. Go out there and get yourself a member. County commissioner.
Sheriff.
Get yourself a governor.
Yeah.
But don't be thinking that you're going to be having a viable presidential candidate to vote for as anything other than a thrown-away protest vote for the next 100 years.
Exactly.
But, you know, but I have a very distinct list of stuff that I expect from a Democratic majority. I expect some sort of health care plan for all Americans. Because routinely that is showing up as a concern of a majority of the American people. We are 5 to 10 years from an absolute collapse of our health care system.
So I expect more towards five.
Yeah. So I expect that out of a Democratic majority. I expect Congress cleaned up but once and for all.
Well, when that majority comes in too, K Street gets shut down.
Yeah.
Put a barricade on each end of it and tell everybody to move out. We don't need no stinking lobbyists.
Yeah, and, you know, once you get the public financing of campaigns, lobbyists become immaterial.
Yeah, they do. That's exactly.
And I realize we're talking about, you know, some really high-blown, highfalutin stuff, but it's some of what Rick was talking about. We get a Democratic majority in there, and I will be an idealist, Wayne. I will be a brass-bound idealist, and I will demand that my government live up to my ideals.
Well, that's exactly right. And once, you know, if we get that majority, you know, there are going the Democratic base and the real Democratic people are going to be emboldened, and I think that a whole bunch of us will start demanding. But we got to get there first.
Yeah,
and we're not going to get there in 2006 or 2008 by voting for third party candidates.
Right, or declaring that there's no difference between a Republican and a Democrat. I'm not gooning on Rick. I love Rick to death. I love his passion. I love his fire. I love his intellect.
I agree.
But he and I do seem to come to a parting of the ways when it comes to just exactly how it is we put our party out there for the rest of the country to see. We don't stand up in 2006 and say, "Look, we know it's as dirty as the Republicans, but would you vote for us, please?"
But yeah. And I could have gone a long time without him telling me that he voted for, was it Al Brown?
No, Harry Brown.
Harry Brown, okay.
Yeah, that libertarian.
I'm sorry, that's the first time I heard that name.
Hey, Wayne,
what
thanks.
What party was Harry with?
Libertarians.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, oh,
all right,
you know, dude's over in the corner doing you-know-what.
Yeah.
Right. All right, brother, we'll talk to you later.
All right, man, have a good one.
All right, take care.
Bye.
Bye. Well, that's it. We're done. I hope you enjoy these lengthy conversations as much as I do. Because this is the talk that America has to have. I don't have 3 hours of my life every night to get on the air here and say, "Well, hey, great, thanks for calling in. That's enough about you. Let's talk about me." No. My life and my time is too valuable. We must have meaningful conversation. And if that means I got to have you on the air for 30 minutes, I'm sorry to take up your time, but I got to have you on the air for 30 minutes. If you say your piece and say, "I'm done, goodbye," in 10, cool. If it only takes you 5, cool. "Hey, Bob, you're a brass-bound SOB," that's 15 seconds tops, and that's cool, too. But we're going to work this stuff out. And we are going to fix things if it is within our power to do it. Because to shirk that duty is to spit in the eye of over 200 years of blood, sweat, toil, and tears, and I'm not about to do it. So, I hope you're okay with it. The show tonight was produced by me. Brian Reznor announces. Our engineer is Randy Kerbway. Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org maintains the stream of this program and the archives of this and many other fine liberal programs. He's got a fundraising drive going on. Do the right thing. Do the right thing by Joe Vecchio at cupofjoe.blogspot.com. We're hoping to bring Joe on for a standalone weekend show, and he's got equipment needs, and it's not going to happen without you.